Our legislation, as bit outdated, and that's why I mentioned earlier that we're going through a new, or we were expecting a new legislation to be enacted very soon. But we had workshopped the preliminary outcome with the operators. When we talk about the operators, we have two mobile operators, GSM operators, which is, as highlighted yesterday, MTC, which has significant market share of about 87%. And we have one fairly a new entity, which has been suffering so much to pick up in the market simply because of the high termination rate from the dominant operator. And again, a new field of luck is Namibia Telecom. Namibia Telecom has rolled out CDMA services, which is called Switch. It's a fixed mobile product, and therefore it has been included in the process as well. Telecom is an incumbent, it's highlighted, and in that respect, they were more than willing to actually come on board and come to a compromise agreement, and so it's our one, but we had very difficult cases with the MTC. Of course, that is expected because trying to protect their significant market ownership, and most of the reason is that the table was not different from the one that we had from Vodafone yesterday about adjusting the business model takes time. Nonetheless, eventually an agreement was reached that dropped the mobile penetration rate to 3 to 7%. From this year. Unfortunately, this was disputed by the operators, and they thought that it was too premature, struck from $1.06 to 30 cents. And therefore, their proposal was then that we compromise at least on 60 cents. And that's the agreement that we have come to. It was diverted most recently. And Telecom Namibia has already passed on the new rates to consumers. We expect that the final interconnection agreement between all the operators will soon be submitted to the regulatory authority. But nonetheless, the results are already being sought because there's already been a consensus that a drop of 6% will be into effect. The challenges that we experience, of course, are no different from the challenges that South Africa is experiencing now, where operators are very reluctant to reveal commercial sensitive information. In fact, we can highlight that we went up to the boardroom of MTC shareholders, Portugal Telecom, up in Lisbon to fight the issues of interconnection because of the reluctance of the MTC. Namibia has a history of non-compliance when it comes to regulations, and these are issues related to lack of capacity within the regulators, and hopefully it will have now come to an end when we say that the regulatory handling period is almost over, given that the new legislation is on its way. Nonetheless, I would say that besides the reluctance of sharing of the information, which significantly impacted upon the study, our technical consultants were quick enough to look at the annual reports of the operators and work out the cost-based figures based on what they recorded of their financial performance. In case Dr. Stock has a few words to say, I would actually just say that we're very honored to be here, and we are accompanying our colleagues from the Department of Communications. We have a detailed presentation to give to them in Pretoria on Friday, and we'll also be meeting our ICASA counterpart just to sort of share our experience from the regulatory point of view, and we are also sharing the meeting with the 7 agencies. It will be speaking this afternoon anyway, and we'll be bringing into perspective, we'll bring into perspective on the Namibian experience in detail. But with those few words, I would simply like to say we are humbly honored to be here, and we do hope that South Africa, and I'm actually saying we are very optimistic that South Africa will pull this off in no time, and I can only wish them the very best. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any questions that you might have?
She did for lunch?
Yeah, sure.
I'm really interested in your last statement where you say that you've used your technical staff to look at the budget of the operators and by analyzing it determine the cost. Do you have them here to assist us?
We have a public report which sort of consolidated or which wrote a summary of the overall outcome that we can speculate, but not very sure if Dr. Stock has integrated that aspect into his presentation as well. He's integrated in the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There are no further questions, and I think we can continue with our program. The first presenter on the program is Dr. Shan Rambert. It's not Dr. Shan Rambert. Okay, Shan Rambert is the commissioner of the Competition Commission, and he's accompanied by Kitwit. How would you then? What do we have given their title? Doesn't media refer to you as doctor?
No.
But thank you. Honorary doctor. Title conferred by the Portfolio Committee on Communication. Okay, thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. I've spoken to the committee previously at the last hearing, and I'm not going to repeat what I've said there. We've also made certain submissions to this committee, and I'll just briefly go through them. When we made that submission, didn't intend to be making a presentation before this was put up, but I'm happy to be here to speak to our submission. Just as an introduction, I think as we said the last time, the Commission does agree with the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee that mobile call termination rates are high in South Africa, and as we pointed out, these high prices mean a number of things, with the reduced consumption of mobile voice telephony services, it results in the exclusion of smaller rivals in the market, and it is an expression perhaps of tacit collusion amongst mobile operators. Higher telephony costs also impact, as a point I made the last time, on the performance of firms in other sectors of the economy, chilling competition and economic development. Therefore, we do support an expeditious process to reduce the cost of interconnection. Just to kind of speak a little bit about the structure of this market, which I think is important, and the point I'm going to make in conclusion, is that the sector is highly concentrated. Both MTN and Vodacom qualify under the definition of dominance of the Competition Act. Telkom is not likely to be dominant because of a smaller market share, and Telkom has only recently entered the market. And in a market with a structure like this, passing on the benefits of competition and supply of retail for consumers is not likely to be very effective. So there's a structural problem in the market. This problem comes directly from an objective fact relating to the structure of the market. A point we made the last time has been made by a number of other submissions to the committee is what we call unintended consequences, but sometimes are referred to as waterbed effects. Here we're talking about due to the market power of incumbents in this market and the lack of effective competition, operators are likely to recover their profits lost from lower call termination rates by increasing other retail prices. And of course, this is not a desirable thing. I think that what we want at the end of the day is the total cost to the end user must come down. It would be a zero-sum game if, call termination rates came down, but access prices or lower on-net discounts or higher prices for SMS and data accompanied these drops in prices. ideally one should not seek to regulate the other prices directly, given that there are ways, competitive ways, to deal with it. We do, however, think that CASA should monitor competition in the retail market more broadly with a view to assessing the effectiveness of regulation remedies at wholesale level. And this sort of periodic review is provided for in the ECA. But I think more importantly here, very importantly, we must also take steps to reduce the regulatory barriers to entry. Because more players entering this market will provide the kind of competitive pressures that will ultimately bring the prices in check. So we encourage the allocation of protection to new entrants at low cost in voice and data. The focus on spectrum, which technology providers of achieve economies of scale and control equipment enhances, we need to focus on that, those aspects of spectrum that provide equipment enhanced cheaply. I believe a submission yesterday by the is relevant here. That is the kind of firm we're talking about that could in turn provide competition. And so generally, to bring in the providers of the voice and data services based on existing new technology in direct competition with the incumbents. And greater entry and more competition is ultimately the strength, the ability of the companies to have market power. That's the one point. The second point that we want to make is that we clearly support an interim process to reduce domination. However, we must point out that any figure arrived at arbitrarily is subject to challenge, particularly in the kind of litigious environment that we've been in. A number of challenges by cell phone companies around regulation. We've also seen this in other sectors, like the health sector, experiencing a problem where in terms of their NSRPL, where they're arriving at figures that are not defensible. They are ending up having to deal with a lot of litigation around it. So it's important that these are defensible, and by defensible, we mean that they must be arrived at by some kind of objective process. Now, of course, the industry would be more concerned that these figures perhaps are too low, that it kind of will cut into their profits. But quite frankly, our fears are that they might actually be too high. And the proposal made of cutting it from 120 to 60 cents, while it's quite a dramatic cut, could still end up being a profit too high. So that's something we need to kind of think about. And we do believe that while there are people can quibble around the methodology and how to arrive at this cost, that there is data available and there is a costing methodology in COACAM that can be, that's the code of accounts, the cost allocation manual that is part of the regulations through which the CASA gets information from the incumbents in the industry. And we think that there is this information that will allow for a substantial one-off reduction on the basis of the costing methodology provided by COACAM. And we support further reductions over the next 3 years, but also on a defensible basis. In other words, we shouldn't be guessing these figures. And we believe that, therefore, ICASA should continue with the regulatory process of making visits to the ECA with a view of reducing termination rates to an appropriate level. One of the issues that comes up here often and in our work in the Commission very often is how to deal with issues of confidentiality. There's two things that go on here. One is often you get industry players making very exaggerated claims of confidentiality. These are kind of not justified. When you scrutinize their claims, you'll find that there's nothing there. We've had this with banking industry example. And there's a tendency of the industry to kind of think that this is a kind of rule that is uncontestable. You know, confidentiality is not in that kind of view. However, on the other hand, there are very valid claims of confidentiality. You know, to kind of be really commercially sensitive information or strategic information is the very stuff of competition. That stuff necessarily needs to be kept confidential. So we need to kind of be very careful about dealing with this, because on the one hand you have exaggerated claims, but on the other hand you have real valid reasons for why certain pieces of information need to be confidential. And I think that, you know, often what the problem here is that the industry kind of hides behind this confidentiality rule, which they feel is, should not be contested. So, you know, the next point to make is that I make this point because we've been asked by CASA and others about whether it is appropriate for these rates to become kind of like a bilateral or multilateral process. You know, how should the regulator go about consulting with the industry in making these decisions? Our big concern has been that competition problems may arise in cases where private firms engage in multilateral discussions independent of the regulatory process. These problems fall away, however, if the price-setting process is enforced and led by the regulator in line with its regulatory mandate. So it's not good enough, I think, for regulators to be saying, we want to arrive at a particular decision. You bunch of competitors go and sit down amongst yourselves and sort this out and come and give us an answer. That is a problematic approach to us. So it is very important that the design and implementation of the interim process be led and managed by CASA in a transparent manner. This will entail practically that CASA convenes the meeting, sets the agenda, keeps the minutes, and generally manages the meeting in a manner that does not result in the sharing of competition. Those are the two points I wanted to make. In conclusion, I should just say that the Commission supports an expeditious process to use mobile call determination rates. This should not be done arbitrarily, but in an extensive way. The Parliamentary Portfolio Committee should have rates data and call camps. Price setting processes should be led and managed by CASA in line with its regulatory mandate. The market power incumbents at retail level should be sustained through lower entry barriers. It is the new entrants that will provide to this market power, and this involves the allocation of spectrum. CASA should periodically review competition as well as ensure that competition is effective.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to have clarity. You have to strict for the fact that certain information is secret and everything. But would it be possible for Incasa, for instance, to discuss this matters and to sort of get a bigger 50% or whatever without revealing any secret information? I don't think we will really get to a point that we can say, okay, so this is a reasonable rate without sharing that information. So it's a sort of checkmate situation.
Yes, it is possible. I mean, the Competition Commission does this all the time. We get information on every merger, on every case, given to us confidentially. We have proper processes and procedures to process that information, keep it, and maintain that confidentiality. It is absolutely necessary that information does be made available to the regulator. I don't think it's a big concern, so that shouldn't be a problem at all. We have in the Competition Act, we haven't had challenges enough. We have a definition of what constitutes confidential information. And it's like, you know, if you're declaring something confidential, you must comply with that definition. And often as a regulator, we don't challenge the confidentiality. We don't quibble about it and say, look, you've given us that, confidential, let's go to court and sort out that one small piece of information. So as a first instance, the regulator is respectful to all claims of confidentiality, but I believe has the ability, if it so wishes, to challenge those claims.
When you are saying there should be a defensible right, what do you mean by defensible? Can you unpack it for me? And you will correct me if I'm wrong. In your presentation, I just got a sense that the Competition Commission will do work with SASA and OFSET. And I want you to tell me what is the relationship on which issues we will really discuss. We discuss issues of, I don't like to use the word interest, issues that affect consumers in terms of the impact connection rate. Where you are also affected. Oh, what is it? Thanks very much. Working with the CASA, the operator, the SPT,
network will be covered and the operators. We don't have, in terms of working with the operators, don't have such a close relationship, I suppose, with the word. And CASA does, we are kind of sector-wide regulators. We have a memorandum of understanding between us. The way in which that works, the context of ex ante and ex post regulation is used. CASA does the ex ante regulation, in other words, regulation that determines future behavior. And the commission deals with ex post regulation, which is the behavior that's already occurred. That should that behavior not be behavior that breaks condition of life. Sometimes there's a license condition that's not there, and that would be something that the council would be used for. But any anti-competitive behavior beyond that is an ex post basis. So in practice, what that means is that when we have a case of anti-competitive behavior, or indeed when we have a merger, we will, as a matter of course, cast an opinion and view on this, and they very often make submissions to us. And when ICASA has any process that it is involved in, we as a matter of course, one final thing about this is that I think that one of the difficulties around this relationship has to do with jurisdiction. The ECA kind of put a something court clause in it that says CASA ultimately has jurisdiction over telecom industries. Last year or this year, the competition has also reversed that by putting a clause in the competition act, kind of saying that the competition authority can also support or have concurrent jurisdiction with CASA. That latter point is sensitive point too, I think. As a commission now, with a case where Telcom is challenging our jurisdiction, Freedom of Information, and it's taken us to the High Court, we have won a case, and we are appealing that case around jurisdiction. So this is part of my loving conscience. Other than to Privileges of Parliament Act and the Rules of Parliament are abundantly clear that Parliament is entitled to ask any information it wants. The way you do it, of course, the mode in which you do it can be different. It could be in a closed session or an open session. But that is a decision to be taken by each committee of Parliament. There's nothing like something called commercial sensitive information that we're not entitled to. That's nonsense. Someone must come here and motivate to this committee or to any other committee of Parliament. And the committee then decides how to deal with it matters, to deal with it confidentially or not. So I think it must be very clear that there's any notion out there that in the private sector there's information that this Parliament is not entitled to. They should get rid of it very quickly. In fact, go and look at the Constitution. We've made sure that the clause in the Constitution particularly provides for it. And that is just a point of clarity I want to make. So I don't even want to discuss confidentiality and so on, because in Parliament's case it does not arise. It may arise, we can't say anything else. The second issue I want to take a different line on. You see, for me, when you've got an industry like this, which was started in 1993, the apartheid government gave licenses to these mobile users. Yesterday we asked them, tell us where it is that you have agreement with either Telkom or all the other operators, either on a tariff that you've set, on a cost that you've set, or anything. They duck and dive at you. They haven't told us. In fact, I've raised very strongly in the committee that we should have follow-up meetings and get every single agreement between them on tariffs and fees and so on. Because, you see, my point is slightly different to what Ms. Kinyan said. I say that yesterday we heard here, and I was stunned to hear it actually, that there's an agreement that was reached soon after the license was given to them with the head of Telkom, sat down with the mobile operators, and they agreed to the tariffs on interconnection fees. They agreed. Now for me, that is the antithesis of a breaching of competition law. If you sit down with all your people that are in that business and you agree to certain costs and you agree to certain tariffs, which we don't know whether they've done that, but we at least know on this issue they've agreed to this. And over the years they've put it up on altitude, both in terms of peak and non-peak. Now, for me, my question is, does the competition committee, are you aware that there's such an agreement? And why isn't that something that's been investigated? Because, I mean, Ms. Kinyan has gone rightly even further to ask the question. Later on, when these agreements were changed, it seems highly dubious and clearly to stop other entrants or make it difficult for other entrants. So that's even a further step. But it's the question I'm asking, the mere existence of such an agreement, that people that run that industry are actually agreeing amongst themselves that this is what we will charge and we will not deviate from this, so that we don't create problems for each other. That's what it is. And that subsequently to that, even although we have a new legal dispensation and a new constitutional dispensation, and we created the Competition Commission after these agreements were entered into the first time, they still exist today. Now, for me, I really need to know your views on this. Do we as a committee refer this matter to you for investigation and to see whether no one else wants to do it, and see whether it's breaching our competition regulations and rules? Or are you already looking at it as now something that has come out factually that agreement exists? And if there are such other agreements where they've agreed to both all the players in that market to charge the same things and even maybe agree to... It clearly for me that is against the competition laws, and I really want you to know today, what do we do as a committee? Do we refer this matter to you for urgent investigation and get a clarity on this so that we know that these things are wrong or all right in terms of your mandate that you have? So those are my two issues.
Some of this is kind of case study stuff. Yeah, first shot that you say. I think as we noted in the last submission, we do have a number of running investigations, particularly against the mobile operators, and we have in fact subpoenaed quite a lot of information around the agreement. But I mean, there is a point to be made. If in an interconnection agreement, for example, there will necessarily be a negotiation around the terms of that agreement. And in the past, of course, because interconnection wasn't regulated by the regulator, we're here today, it should have been. It would have been natural for parties in a bilateral setting to agree on a price. This is what we're going to charge to termination of my network and buses. In that narrow sense of the word, that wouldn't be sufficient. However, as some of this information that came out yesterday, and it's clear, you're having discussions here among competitors, and other issues are coming up that do pertain to competition and do raise concerns with competitors. We are investigating that, and we're actually working to find voluminous information as to tenants.
What I want to make clear is I have got a problem. What happened in 93? Well, I've got a problem with this issue. I don't have a problem that it was an agreement made then. But since then, we have created you. Since then. And the issue I'm raising, since the existence of this commission, with its rules and regulations, the continuation of these types of agreements, and even possibility of solutions to it, that is really what I'm asking. You see, I'm worried when you start saying, oh, of course, it's justified, you know, that it was done. That's not the issue. I want to know from now on, with the competition laws existing, isn't it completely anti-competition to sit down and make an agreement and tariffs? Even if you made it in old days, you've now made it subsequently, and you continue making it, and you continue relying on that agreement. That's the issue. The existence of the agreement. Isn't that anti-competition?
I said something there. What we heard yesterday is that agreement is for life. I don't know whose life. Now, that means it can never be changed. Now, how do parties then alter the agreement? I mean, are they at liberty to meet instead of want to renegotiate the terms of this agreement? Or can you act in this particular way?
If the terms of the agreement at whatever point in time were anti-competitive and in the sense of the current law contravening that, the fact that it's maintained and consistent would be within our jurisdiction and we would be able to take it on. But there's one proviso. Interconnection falls within Chapter 7 of the ECA. So in the conclusion of interconnection agreement, operators necessarily must meet. So we need to be very clear on the jurisdictional issue. But if it falls outside of that scope, and our concern is that there are aspects that may well, then of course we would have jurisdiction. So far as that agreement that you're referring to would contravene the laws and have anti-competitive implications, yes, we would.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Jefferson.
Thank you.
I want to come back to your submission where you, and I think you very, very positive, but I think you don't agree with me, where you say that ideally one should not seek to regulate the retail price. Now, if we were not find ourselves, if we did not find ourselves in the kind of market that we have now, we could have said leave it to the market that will sort themselves out. But look at this. If you look at the prepaid of all three operators, identical. Identical. You can't prove collusion here, but we know. So if you want, in the current situation, you can't leave it to the market. I agree with you that the DOC should look at speeding up and providing cheaper radio frequency spectrum to new entrants. But that alone cannot be a solution to deal with the current problem. Because what guarantee do we have as a committee? You know, this waterbed effect that they talk about. That when they reduce interconnection rates, they then push up the retail price. So I think my proposal will be that while we look at interconnection rates, that the regulator must give the intention or give notice that the regulator will also look at retail price to prevent them from taking the cost, put it back to the consumer from interconnection rate to retail price. But in the current market, unfortunately, the way it structures, you spoke about the structure of the market, I agree with you, the way it's structured now, it is regulated by the regulations, self-regulating by the operators. We don't want self-regulating. We want the regulator to regulate the operations. So, and right now we've got nothing that can prevent them from doing it, from shifting this cost, reduction of interconnection rates to the retail price. What will you think will be your suggestion? Obviously, we will watch it. But, you know, these guys will find ways and means of hiding it here, hiding it there, and, you know, hiding behind confidentiality and costs like that. So, really, we also have to give notice right now that we will ask the regulator to also regulate retail price to prevent them from going that route. Thank you.
Okay. I share all your sentiments around what the problem is. I think you're saying that a way to overcome this is not necessarily to be regulated or prices, but to kind of, you know, hand out more spectrum, get in more players, and that will, and the competition arising out of that will kind of provide the check and balance. You know, of course, you're speculating, and you might well be right, but it might not be sufficient. As it stands, we feel that that would be your best.
I think, I mean, firstly, COSA does have the power to impose the retail prices in that as well. But it's not a good idea on a long term basis. You rather want competition to be that is not an immediate process. So, what we would want to see is terminated is reduced as an almost immediate part to customers in retail prices. And there's a number of options there. One is to attach that condition. Through a regulation, or to say, look, we have a mechanism for periodic review in the ECA, and if after a year we don't see those prices coming down, then we're going to regulate. And that kind of stick might be quite useful. But then at the same time, all those measures to allocate new spectrum in the different areas, facilitating new entry asymmetries or different options within the collection should be, that process should be driven. So that in the long run, you'll join retail price regulation. That has inherent in its own.
Just a follow-up, Kevin, because if you look at Cell C was the entrance into the market, but Cell C was bullied into getting exactly there where the dominant operators, significant operators are in the market. So therefore I'm saying we need not be so. In fact, I would even go to five, but if you start looking at the region, and if we start looking at, you know, giving cost-effective radio frequency spectrum to new entrants into the market, that something should be also qualifying for that. Because we're hoping that those fees are still coming into the market and is going to allow the market to regulate itself, and it didn't happen.
Chair, that is just really the issue of ACS. Regulation coming to say that if you then don't regulate all people, because you have to rank up the norm, in addition to giving them the spectrum, should you not also look at creating sort of different types of clarity for different players to make sure that you in that process have adequate regulation for you?
Professor Creed, I think there are very strong arguments if you want to signal greater competition in the market to look at an asymmetric advantage for those smaller and newer entrants. Ideally, one would have wanted to see that happening when, for example, South Sea entered the market. So there are dangers in bringing it in now. What is actually tonight is South Sea efficient. Is it going to pass on that asymmetric advantage? In other words, is it going to use that to compete aggressively in price, or is it just going to retain those? One has to scrutinize that issue, but it's something one should look at. But there are negative involvement. Should be a time state clause on it. It shouldn't be allowed to say that the first suggestion that can be a danger with the day to day information.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you for the Honourable Minister. Just to reach one thread to the point, that only I could hear that you actually agree with the proposal of the committee, but you definitely don't agree in terms of the proposal of the CIA. I'd also like to know, because of this CIA, what makes you think that the CIA were not interested? And the other thing is that they are also saying, I must not exactly say what you are saying, but my understanding is that you are saying CASA has been given an opportunity to do their work or which is regulated with their mandate. I just want to check with you, you said that CASA who's working with them. Do you think they have that capacity and expertise so that they can do that as quickly as possible, that's required by everybody? I think so, 2 months away today, this hearing is their hope. The outcome of this hearing is their hope, their following license. And the last one, Honorable Chair, is that the other thing, in your input, you put the interest of the operator above the interest of the consumer. And I think you are a South African. You know that we are the poor of the poor who can afford. You can also use the students by the time before yesterday and by the unemployed forum yesterday. That really there's a survey conducted by other people. We do really know them. So you are just one side in terms of this figure. We don't say anything about it. Thank you.
I'm not suggesting that the figures you arrived at, we don't know. We don't know how you arrived at those figures, I think. That's the bottom line. And the only point I'm making is that you need to be able to defend it. In the litigious point that I'm making, I mean, I think that's the point that, you know, how you look at it, right? Then, And let me be clear here, you know, my kind of bottom line fear is not that the figure you've arrived at is too low. My fear is that it's too high. I mean, and my fear is that, I've made this point, my fear is that you're going to cut it by half. Everyone's going to be so happy with it. It'll stay for 60 cents now for the next 20 years. It's going to come down further because nobody's done a proper analysis of what the true figure should be. And I mean, I think that is a pro-consumer point, not a pro-industry point. I'm a bit uncomfortable about what you're asking me to say about the CASA, but I think the general point I would like to make is that I think it is kind of common cause that perhaps CASA has not delivered as quickly and efficiently as it ought to. My view would be that the solution to that is not to strip CASA now of its role, but rather to make it work better in its role. I think that's the only point I'd like to make, that, you know, I mean, there are problems, but I don't think the solution is to say, well, you know, let's now take away this mandate from CASA and do it as Parliament, to the Commission, or whatever the case is. I think the point should be to make that institution work properly as it should. I hope that's diplomatic enough.
You express yourself in a really good way, the Landax doesn't it? Master Lee.
I think what I want to agree with you. Maximize the return
on much remind their profit to increase the oil net routine because of the consequences of the termination of the rate of our rate of transportation. I think that the Honorable Engineer said I just want to ask you a few questions on this, Dr. Sam. I think I'll address this, Doctor. Dr. Sam, because you are going to recover.
Not a doctor. I accept the title of a witch doctor.
Oh!
No,
it's working for a I don't know. Working with the regulator. What do you think about the ECA, especially the chapter 10, and in terms of the termination of the rate? Maybe do you think there is something that makes the ICASA to delay so much that would suggest that there should be amendment on that ECA? And I would ask a question why this has not been discussed with the legislators in the parliament. I just wanted to know for me whether to have an idea of the ECA, whether it's how it is written, whether there is a problem. Because yesterday we got different opinions about it. So I want to hear from you. And I wanted to speak about the confidentiality of the court that the industry somebody has addressed that already. I think it's a member in Silange. And I think I support what he said. Thank you.
I'm perhaps not the most qualified person to speak at the ECA. I do know that this committee went through a very extensive and detailed process before putting together the ECA. In fact, the Competition Commission also participated in it and had many kind of disagreements with it in the course of the hearings before this very committee. Clearly around that educational point which we lost in this, in that we wanted a concurrent jurisdiction and ICASA ended up with exclusive jurisdiction. I don't know what to say about problems with the ECA, but he has some comments to make. But I think that clearly in that process, which I was very kind of badly involved in, there was a very lobbying process. There was a lot of lobbying to this committee in CASA by the industry. I think that there has its dangers because at the end of the day you kind of end up mediating interests rather than taking objective positions. And I think that my kind of general sense of it is that it's a very kind of rule bound legislation as opposed to kind of say, outcome-based legislation. There's too many rules in it and we get tangled up in those rules, which is what I think is happening here. Those are just my personal views on that.
I think there are difficulties in the drafting of the system. One is the jurisdiction issue to be now resolved, and that is the case of Trump, the Competition Act across the board, even on exports, and that is being addressed in the Competition Act. But the other is that it does set up quite a number of hurdles that ICASA has to go through in developing the regulation to address the market problem. And I think there are ways and means that can be simplified and passed up. Having said that, though, there is a distinct advantage in that it requires the regulator to apply its mind and to apply competition law principles to the determination of whether a regulation is needed or not and what its basis is going to be. And that is a positive thing because it makes sure it makes sure that the regulations are properly targeted to a market failure, and it prevents a kind of situation where things like price controls are arbitrarily determined. So insofar as it fills that process, then it's quite useful. But there are things like undue preference, for example, I think Miratel referred to it yesterday in 6-7-1, which is more of an ex post thing which should come up. And any reference to monitoring and investigation should come out. It can be simplified in terms of, and I understand the DOC is going through a process to address that.
I'm sure one issue has been covered. You see, Chair, we normally talk about the previous disadvantage, people and so on. Now, maybe we are going to have the PTO, previous disadvantage for passing us. In relation to this agreement, which currently exists, that until death do us apply. Well, that's what has been highlighted yesterday. That the nature of the agreement is that the until death do us apart. Which really, from my side, I would like a concrete commitment from the Competition Commission to deal with that particular matter. Because it's really the death will do us apart, it becomes a problem. Even if you open the market, but if you don't deal with some of those issues, with people that put agreements, it might defeat the purpose. Of what we are trying to do. But I must also say, no, you do have your second bite. We have accepted that we need to deal with some amendments possible in terms of the ECA. So if we have lost that time, you might try again to come and convince the committee. Maybe this time might win, but there are no guarantees that you will, but you can have a second bite around the new processes of the legislation and so on. But the issue that I wanted to go straight into it is that I'm not sure whether we have received the communication from ICASA, the statement, in terms of their engagement with the operators, what's your view in terms of that? Because one issue you have raised is that when you kept costs in it, you were making an example at 60 cents, that you might agree now that is 60 cents. But when you do the actual study, only to find that if not, maybe 20 cents or 40 cents and so on. But I must say, going back to the mental health raise of our figures, you see, when you are sitting here and the regulator is saying to you, actually the actual cost of interconnection is around 40 cents. Which immediately we are saying that the current price is more about 85 cents. That's where our figures of the initial position come from. So you'll say again our figures, they don't seem to be. Because our base in our argument that we've been told that it's 40 cents. We also take into consideration that you cannot just cut it immediately because there's going to have some impact in the inner sense. And that's why we said 60 cents, then you deal with the other methods in terms of slide price. Moving forward and so on. With that information, will your argument be the same in terms of our figure, in terms of whether they are real or not? But the next thing is that, you see, yesterday, when Vodacom was here, I must also appreciate because, you see, I think Vodacom did take this process here. You can see in terms of the delegation who was here representing the group that indeed yesterday that they took the committee serious. We still have to wait and see those who are coming whether they take the committee serious or not. But Vodacom, on that score, I appreciate what they've done in terms of setting the committee serious and so on. But we'll wait and see until we finish it here. But I'm saying I'm raising that matter because you see, part of this issue of confidentiality was that they could not tell us what is the extra cost. But still they also feel that our cards to hide. But you see, you can't go into the dark and shoot. You are just shooting, you don't know where you are shooting, you are just in the dark shooting. That's what the good thing they put us to. Because you say, if we're not realistic, what is your extra cost of interconnect? They can't see. Of course, there is some confidentiality and so on. Maybe there are other reasons. Maybe they already applied for the process. I'm not sure whether that process they are going through or not. But I'm just saying, under that difficulty, because you see, you can't get the information. Probably it can't start as they've been stated, but you don't have that information. The information you have to discover is for them. What's your comment on our proposal based on the 40 cents? And looking in terms of what the statement from ICASA is saying, it will be the extra cost base plus not exceeding 50%. If you look 40 cents and not exceeding 50%, I will still not realistic ourselves in terms of what you are proposing.
Okay,
I'm
low. First issue, we will definitely, we can commit to kind of looking to talking about this agreement, I think that's something we would have an interest in.
Just one point to make, and we will look at it, and if there's a contravention, then we must definitely act on it. But this point that we made, that the agreements are indefinite and cannot be undone, it's our interconnection agreement. We can't have published in February draft interconnection regulations. Now, these regulations set up and deal with a number of issues around the terms and conditions of these agreements. Now, if those regulations deal properly with all of these issues, then previous agreements become null and void. They must comply with the new interconnection regulations. So I'm not sure that it's necessarily the case that an agreement concluded at some point in the past now remains evergreen. It remains evergreen unless the regulations and laws around them change. And parallel to the process we're conducting with our investigation, the cost of process on interconnection regulations, really in a sense dictates terms and conditions around these agreements must be concluded, because it can in effect change the nature of those agreements. They don't have to sit indefinitely within those regulations. That includes issues of class and non-discrimination principles and other issues around the effect on competition of these.
Yesterday about the commercial agreement, but now that you are unpacking it a bit, there should be two. The one is signed in 1993, because then when they increased the interconnection rate to 1.25, they must have then amended that old agreement or came with a new agreement. So it's two agreements, Jeff. When Telstra came onto the market and they increased the interconnection rate, and then the old agreement.
Correct. There would be a written amendment to the interconnection agreement, and that would be subject to the regulations on interconnection. Right now, guidelines on interconnection what's needed is new regulations which have far more teeth in terms of the ECA. And once they're enforced, those agreements and amendments must be changed to comply with those regulations.
Chef, I don't mind the principle of HD or beat, as long as they'll finish my question. Well, they've not finished my question. I don't mind the HD or beat, fine, but they must also finish the response.
Yeah, I really wanted to not let it go and challenge what you responded to, Mr. Lowe, earlier. But let me just, again, now let's comment on this. You see, the problem is this. I'm very worried about being a good lawyer by putting all the ifs and buts. You see, my worry is when you start even butting about this issue, the fundamental issue is not the fact that they're allowed to talk to each other or that the ECA allowed them to talk to each other. The fact of the matter is they didn't only talk to each other, they then agreed with each other they will not differ on a price. That's the problem that I'm saying. So I don't want you to respond to that, but that's the issue really that needs to. But I agree with what you're saying. If we have regulations on this, well, clearly that is then what becomes the law. because there is no vacuum anymore. So I don't have any problem. Yesterday it was said that this is for life, but clearly that's not. It's for life until life changes through regulation. The issue I don't want to go and challenge is this. You see, there is a place for competition always. That is why we pass the law, and that's why it's part of our legal framework. But one must be careful to make competition God. You know, it is not this. This does not solve all problems, particularly not on a highly distorted economy like ours. So when you suggest to Mr. Lill that, you know, by looking at the retail prices, that the answer really is competition and not other mechanisms, although you made the concession on asymmetrical regulation to Ms. Clear, I want to suggest that one must be careful to be dogmatic about it. Because clearly, I would go further than Mr. Lill even. I would say that not only must we look at the retail, not us, but ICASA, and we must oversee it. We must look at the whole pricing structure. Because this is an industry which was formed in 1993. Within the first 2 years, they had covered all their expenses. Since then, they've only making profits. You know, I didn't realize the extent of it, but yesterday when we were told by Telkom that they pay 5 billion rand in it, just interconnection fees, they pay 5.4 billion rand to the operators. Then you understand the extent of this industry and the huge profits and the huge amounts involved. If just the one pricing part, interconnection fees, is causing a 5 billion payover and an 800,000 the other direction, then we know what we're talking about. You're talking here about people that can afford promoting rugby teams and soccer teams and God knows what else they do because of the profits they make. Now, the problem is if you then as the Competition Commission say to us that the only way to resolve that is by creating further competition, then I have a problem with that. Of course, creating further competition is one mechanism to do it. But clearly you shouldn't exclude the other mechanism. And the analogy I want to use is a simple one. You know, you invite everyone to come and run a 100-meter race. You say it's all going to be fair. Then when you get there, you see the mobile operators, handsome, strong people, running shoes on, ready to run. Yeah, the rest of the competitors got a big iron ball on their foot because of all these agreements that exist and because they've been making billions of rands and the advantage they have in that environment. Then you're saying we're running a 300-meter race. You invite everyone to the 100 meters through competition, but you're not running a fair race. You cannot. Therefore, that does not mean that we mustn't encourage spectrum and so on. That must happen. But please, I don't want the message to go here through the media from the competition committee. We don't need to look at further prices and so on. This committee is already suggesting that we actually look at the whole structure of the industry and to do so in the future. So I just wanted to give you a chance to just rectify yourself there, not let you walk out here with people having the wrong perception of what you're saying.
Look, your points are well made. I don't think, I'm sorry if we come across a little bit, we certainly become kind of dogmatic or ideological in our competition. We kind of recognize that market failures exist and there's meaningful regulation in a number of things. And in fact, the point of the periodic review in the CPA is for economists to be assessing whether competition is effective or not, and if it's not effective, the regulator. That's the point of that legislation where I understand it. So certainly, I mean, the points are well made, and I think that you know, another point here is that in an older paradigm, you know, regulation and competition were two separate things, four things. But the way these things do this now is that you can regulate through competition principles. In other words, the very form and nature of your regulation must infuse more competition in a market. And so it's a falsity sometimes to see these as separate and opposing things. So that point I would like to also comment on by point around what I'm just point about how whether 40% is objective or not. Look, I mean, can't say whether 46 is 60% is. I think the only point I'm making there, and I'm trying to think about the expectation very directly, is that sure, I think there's a lot of anecdotal evidence but I'm suggesting to you that that's not a methodology that's going to stand up to the principle that you might have to do it, the level at which you can explain about some kind of technical detail of how you actually go about your life, and that's not a thing. And I'm just the only point that I'm making, that I'm really happy that you said it here. And the issue of rates based on some call that you make of the available information that you have, that you will know that a proper process is done in the proper age, because you all know that the price you pay is high or too low, and you want to get a price.
Last question. Here we are now struggling with time.
Okay. My question actually flows from the answer you've just given. I'm concerned, I mean, based on the submissions you've received and on the presentations you've had from those in favour of what's been referred to as a benign interconnection regime, the argument has been, you know, we're not experts, we don't understand all the nitty-gritty that goes into the cost base. Don't just set an arbitrary price, it'll ruin the market, we won't be able to do business, our business model will be in the shambles, there'll be all trade effects, and we'll have to punish our consumers by raising prices elsewhere, and you'll have done this because you didn't go through the right process to establish what the true cost base is. At the same time, we have the operators meeting with ICASA to discuss, you know, such a rate should be cost based with a reasonable markup not exceeding 50% of cost. And we've also had, I mean, based on the submission we had from Vodacom, a discussion about how interconnect revenue is plowed back into sort of almost philanthropic endeavors to increase penetration. So my question is, to what extent can possible collusive behavior in deciding what constitutes the cost base be prevented if the mobile operators are sitting in a room and saying, you know, because then they can tack on anything. They can say, you know, marketing is crucial to the best, or they can say, you know, sponsoring a rugby team. You know, and it can be, it's possible then to argue that, you know, the base, the actual cost of terminating the call is not the only important thing, but that there are other things. And at one point, can we separate what should be in the organization's business model from what really is part of the base price? And how can we prevent collusion in that process?
The point I made is there are perhaps many different methodologies for working out this cost. I think that different people will work it out differently. I don't think that's a problem. People must just declare their methodology and will evaluate what they're saying against what they've declared as their way in which they get about doing it. We might decide, CASA as a regulator, they might decide to use one or other of those methodologies. So there is a problem of how of different ways of working this out, and maybe different are working it out in different ways, and I see your point about kind of creating a force that around a kind of common way of working it out. There's a point well made, there is a point that you made around why we just think that multilateral processes have a problem, that exactly that point of what we made. And we don't see any reason why CASA should get independent information from the council, separate set of speakers and independent people to work it out. The first point I made is about that where they are receiving this information independently from each of the different operators. Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rambana and Mr. Reese. This is time, but the questions were all broken. Can we now get NCN to come on?
Chairperson, just a comment. Last time when we had problems with the SABC board, I scared them with Robben Island. Maybe we must do the same with all their cell phone operators and ICASA. Send them to Robben Island. Sort out all the problems.
Ha, 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 ha. Better than you, eh?
You've been here for the morning, so you know what the procedure is.
I'm here today, thanks, Jim. So certainly, honourable members and chairman, thanks very much for this opportunity, and certainly, ladies and gentlemen, more especially from the media, thanks very much for this opportunity to have a chat with you. Maybe just on that letter, I think if I can start with that, just saying that, you know, the issue on confidential information is not so much the history. It is, when you talk about costing, you want to talk about the future as well. Because, you know, whatever new costing you bring in or new pricing you bring in has a direct relation to how you're going to develop the market and invest in the future as well. So, and that's where all of the sensitivity is for us as well. So I hope you'll be able to bring that one. If I can then move to my presentation, and really, you know, I've got 21 slides here today. Thanks very much. I am a little bit nervous today, I don't know why. I think what I've done here is we've got...
I can tell you, because it deals with profit.
I think, Chairman, it deals with a lot more than just profit. It deals with the industry and the future as well, and lots of people's lives. My key message really is these 5 bullet points. So what I've called, I'll start with the key messages and say the next 21 slides really will reinforce these 5 key messages. That's really the format of this presentation. You know, really, when we talk about interconnect, that is one side of it. I think the key issue here for all of us, I suppose, is retail prices and the price that the consumer pays out there for their service and the innovation of those services out there. So certainly, you know, I think my first bullet point is to focus on retail rates and to talk a little bit more about retail rates, because I don't think, you know, I've sat here 2 days, a lot of the information about what's happening in the retail market, the pricing and so on, has come through clearly. Certainly, you know, we have seen prices decrease in the past 10 years. You know, that's the reality. Certainly, if you take inflation consideration, you know, if you look at all utilities out there, you know, I ask you, how do we compare to them and decreasing costs over this period? And I'll show you some more slides. Remember, this is just the intro on it. We've spoken about pre and post phase, and certainly from our perspective, I'll show you some hard, solid evidence straight off our billing system of what exactly people are paying, both pre and post, and certainly pre is much less, although originally it was much higher, quite correctly. It was a long period it was, and I'll explain why that was. I think key to this whole debate is, you know, our access stocks. You know, today it costs you basically for free to connect and stay connected to the MTN network. That is the reality. That is quite unique, certainly, in this country. There's not many places in the world that I know of, and I've spent a lot of time in our 21 operations, where you have that, and certainly that is a key element that has driven penetration in South Africa, no doubt. And we're sitting at, you know, penetration over 100%. I mean, that's not with warm bodies behind them. You know, certainly warm bodies more 70%. And you must compare to India, and I'll talk more about that. It's an area that we spent a little bit more time recently in. And so, that's news. And certainly we can do some comparisons, you know, just why the penetration is lower in India, why the penetration is lower in the States as well. And I think there's good insight there. I think the most critical second point I want to make is that, you know, people talk about MTN making all these profits. And I'm talking MTN South Africa now. You know, there's 21 companies in the MTN group, certainly the listed entity. But I am speaking here for MTN South Africa. I'm the MD of that operation. If you look at that operation as well, certainly the past 2 years, we have invested in our infrastructure more than any of our profits. And I'll show you slides that reinforce that. So maybe if I could repeat that again. You know, if you look at a year ago, we invested 5.8 billion. This year, we're busy investing 7.5 billion. And that's what telecoms need, is these type of investments. A lot of these investments is about building the future mobile broadband, provide internet connectivity for a broader populace of this country. The mobile networks are the key component networks that will deliver on these futures as well. There's no doubt, if you go to Europe and all the rest, it's now given that the mobile network, the infrastructure, is the most efficient to provide the mobile broadband connectivity. Now, we're making those investments. We've made it based on a certain environment, a costing environment, and certainly, you know, again, I say that there's not much profit here if we're investing more than what we're making. I think the third bullet point, I think that people don't maybe fully understand, is that interconnect is a net source of revenue for us. It's not an input cost revenue. It's a net source of revenue. Just as what we get from consumers for prepaid, postpaid, SMS data, so also do we get a revenue stream from interconnect. If we switch off that revenue stream in any form or shape, it has direct consequences to what that is funding in cost. And again, you know, I think as this debate goes forward, that conversation has to happen maybe with the committee specifically, exactly how that is and what those fundings are exactly. And I think, I suppose, that's the costing conversation that we mentioned in China. Maybe moving on to the next item then, you know, so certainly, as I said, we work in a certain regime at the moment of interconnect. Based on that, we've made our investment decisions. companies like us look 10 years ahead, even longer, searching the technology fields, and those are the horizons that we use. So it's critical, certainly from an investment perspective, that we have very good clarity of what the rules are, that we can make those investments and still make some returns. You know, as I said, these investments are we making at the moment. Be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure exactly how we're going to make those returns on the mobile data space, because the rules are being written in that space. So that's why, again, long term. So we take a long term view. So whatever changes are made, we ask and we say don't do it too drastic, because the impact would be seriously affecting this industry, this country. This, you know, it's not just about, you know, this industry is 630,000 people as well. It will impact those people materially. If we do it in a way that is transitional, layered, and timing-wise, you have an opportunity to change your business model. I can see I've professed too much already. Moving on, then, cutting through is not a costly intervention, I must just stress that. Moving on, then, to, you know, so just on each of the items, I just want to reinforce and provide you some more hard information in, around those items as well. So just starting with call rates, you know, there has been a lot of benchmarks done. I've seen many benchmarks. You know, the latest benchmark is the one from the DOC as well. I just would like to stress, when you do benchmarking, you need to make sure that you compare apples to apples. You know, I've taken one item here in this benchmarking comparison where our prepaid tariff for plastic was used. Now, that tariff was basically 1% of our customer base. If you use the tariff, what we call MTN zone, which is 50% of our customer base, you will see a differential of the price to compare of 52%. And if you do that comparison and that benchmark start, it changes the picture totally of our competitors, our pricing is in this country relative to the rest of the world. So, you know, I think one of my personal recommendations going forward would be that in benchmarking, because really the key question still stays, is the consumer out there getting a good deal or not? And how do you do that comparison? One of those comparisons is make sure we all, as an industry, agree the benchmarking and then do the international benchmarking, and then we've got hard evidence and fact of it. And again, I'm saying as an industry, certainly with the DOC, certainly with the cost involvement as well. But, you know, we need to all be in sync then that what, you know, that we are comparing apples to apples. I have some other slides as we go forward on this benchmarking to show again some of the differentials. So this is not the only item that I want to highlight as well. So when I show you the zone blended, that is the average rate. If I look at what customers are paying on average, taking all their minutes and all the money they pay for it, then that is the average rate in MTN zone, which is say 50% of our prepaid rates that they are paying. I said retail prices have declined, and they have. Again, if you look at postpaid over the past 10 years, 35% declining, and prepaid even more so, 82%. And you can see in that also is a rebalancing happened, where originally, when we launched prepaid in this country in November 1996, we were the uniqueness in the world. We were one of the first countries, not the first country, that launched prepaid in our market as well. So we developed all the IT and all the rest locally as well. But going into that market was unique to us. At that stage in the world, it was all postpaid. And so we did not really know what the pricing was. All we could say was that if this guy is going to only come on board and not give me a longer-term commitment, then I must up the price. Of course, so that's what happened. So initially, price was high. But over time, you can see how that's balancing out. Today, I've got another slide showing you that the price for prepaid is most definitively much less than postpaid on average. Of course, we have many factors. Generally, we take our customer base and segment them into 7 main categories, and for each of them, we uniquely look at what offerings, what pricing, what affordability, depending on their usage, depending on how they want it, and what, you know, a lot of products and so on and so forth. Another very much unique product that was launched first and certainly in South Africa. We have a lot of IP or intellectual property copyright associated with something called MTN Zone. I don't know how many of you know what MTN Zone is exactly, But what we do is the following. We say that from a cost perspective, all networks are built to accommodate 1 hour a month as the busy hour. So outside that hour, you could argue that there's spare capacity that is not utilized. If the customer uses it or not, it's just lying spare. So what we have done is we have a dynamic system that continues per base station, works out what is the utilization of that base station, and if it's below a certain level, we start discounting real-time to the customer, and he gets an SMS, not an SMS, it's a cell broadcast, and tells them exactly what the discount is that he can then. And so a lot of the cases are discounting down to the 95%. This makes telecommunication outgoing calls hugely affordable for most people, except, of course, there's a timing issue. So if you've got an emergency, or if you've got a real emergency, you can get a free call of 112, but if you want an emergency where you need to dial the phone now, of course, you'll pay a different tariff. But if you can afford to wait, then certainly our networks are affordable to anybody because of this service. And again, as I said, we've not rolled it out to South Africa. We've rolled it out into most of our markets across Nigeria, Afghanistan, etc., and it's been very well received. So that's retail prices. Moving on to prepaid, that's the comparison. So if I take my total postpaid traffic, look at what the effective rate is that I'm paying for it, and then I compare it to my prepaid, then that is the tariff that people are really paying. You know, that's peak, off-peak, whatever the average. If I say every minute what price I got, that's what's coming through as well. So just to highlight that as well. Just to talk on access, and I see I'm saying my sims are costing in the market 49 cents. I see my competitor was 1 rand yesterday. So certainly the price of sims is basically for free out there. And what do you get? For 49 cents, what do you get? You get, firstly, that you can connect to the network, number for life. All you have to have is one incoming call every 3 months, effectively nothing. And you can connect and stay connected to that network. And again, this is probably the key element that has driven the penetration rates that we see in this country. You know, we're sitting, as I said, at 107%. I mean, Namibia is sitting at 50%. It started similar in earlier periods than us in Australia. That's historical. Secondly, what we have done is we subsidize handsets. So if you look at the prepaid handsets, especially in the market, you know, we do spend up to 100 Rand and then postpaid a lot more as well of subsidy that goes into those handsets to make it more affordable. And, of course, that is millions and billions of rands that we invest in the handsets. That is a key component of your total cost of ownership. So, you know, I think that's, I think, very clear. So we're saying we provide access at a just about free rate, and we provide mechanisms that people can phone at a very affordable rate. You know, quarters of a cent per second type of rates and stuff if you go down to the 95% of the MTN zone as well. Just on data tariffs, again, you know, in the DOC study or benchmarking study, we couldn't really relate those prices to what is the reality in our market. You know, if I compare, our prices are 40 times cheaper than Chile's. You know, in the study it said we were more expensive. I mean, I'd make you 19 cents. In this country, there's very few places, none that I know, for mobile that you can pay the price you do for mobile data. 19 cents a meg. It is phenomenal. When I roam in the UK, I pay 300 Rand on other networks per meg. So again, there's two elements to it. Firstly, our pricing is the best in the world. And I'm saying the best. I've not done a total study of all the places, but certainly I traveled and I've not seen prices as competitive as this anyway. And secondly, that the speed and the quality of those speeds is out of 800 operators in the world, we're one of 40 that are running speeds of up to 14.4 on our networks as well. So you can see what we have done here is we invested into real advantage-given infrastructure at speed that is unique or certainly of the top 40 in the world, And all of this, of course, costs money. The reason we're doing this is that we are a strong believer that mobile networks will become the definitive way of how a country will connect to the internet. And it's going to be the most affordable way and certainly the definitive way, especially in the markets where you can't really put cable infrastructure down. It's just, we just spread out, economics doesn't make sense, and of course those cables get lost somewhere here. So I'm going to come back to this point, because certainly, you know, as MTN, when we started, had a vision that, well, we didn't have a great vision. When we started, we said that, you know, by 2012, we will have 350,000 customers across this network. But we never envisioned what the pricing is, was where it will end. But as we stand now, we sit with 107%, and as we stand now, we say, well, for our country to be competitive, we need most of our people to also connect to the internet at affordable rates. And so maybe in 10 years' time, we should have a vision that says, you know, 70% of our population should have access to mobile data or the internet to be competitive in the world market as well. And I'll leave it at that. I've mentioned our profit. I mean, this says it all. First and foremost, if you compare our EBITDA margins or then our profits relative to any of our other operations, we're certainly sitting at a much lower deficit. A lower level than them. I mean, you can see there's some comparisons, but certainly it's been accepted that, you know, certain investment community would agree that our margins are just not comparable to most operators around. But that's not the main point. The main point is you'll see there's our tax on the left at 49, and there's our investment of 15. So the past 2 years, we have invested more than our profits in this infrastructure network. Interconnects with fiber optics. I think maybe just to go back to internet costs and interconnect revenues and where they really, how they contribute. As I said to you earlier, interconnect as airtime, as SMS, as data, is just another revenue stream. It's another amount of money that's coming that funds certain things. And those are the list of things that fund. And so certainly if interconnect starts collapsing in the price, then some of those other items on the right will directly have to move. You know, certainly in preparation for these discussions on interconnect that we've had over the past, you know, month or two, I have internally started a huge process of relooking at our total business plan. So, you know, what I'm putting up there, you know, what our investment is into broadband, what we're doing for running our trenches and putting fiber across, pulling back some of those, that is a, you know, that is a reality of what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis in my operations, because we have no choice. We need to start redeveloping our model to support these changes that are coming through in this industry now. So those are the key elements. I mean, I think the critical one is rural coverage. You know, if you look at my $7.5 billion investment, you know, at least $2.5 billion of that, probably more fund to transmission, is going into more rural base stations, into more remote areas with communities and stuff. A lot, you know, $2 billion of that is going into transmission, providing the fiber, the connectivity to those base stations and so on. So, you know, directly related, the one reason directly related would be what those investments that we make. I think included in these costs is also distribution. I think there's always a lot of debate which aspect of distribution, you know, should be part of your cost or not. Certainly, you know, we subsidize a lot, the handsets, well, as you know, certainly the SIMs and so on and so forth as well. We spend quite a bit of money in paying also service providers to service our customers for us as well. So that is included in that cost, and I want to highlight that, because that is sometimes a small issue. I've spoken about, and I think many people have spoken about, interconnect delivers on penetration. I'm not going to spend maybe more of that, except to say, if you take India, for example, penetration is low. If you look at India, if you want to connect a SIM, if you want to connect, the cost of a SIM is sitting at 15 Rand, if I do a comparison, and so I do this for free. You know, if you want to be stay connected, you know, it costs you 30 Rand every 6 months, you know, so that's not a cost with us. And one of the reasons for this is that the interconnect regime was just about zero in India as well. If you look at in the States, and in the early days, people didn't pay for incoming calls in India as well because of that. The same in the States, you pay for incoming calls, with the internet is so low as well, and you can see also the penetration. But there's much better studies that I'll show you that show the relationship between penetration and interconnect. And I mean, starting with that, this is a Ofcom study. Now, Ofcom is the regulator out of the UK. It's probably considered the most authoritative in doing these studies. This is a study of 39 countries. And I mean, it's definitive. The higher the interconnect rates, the higher the penetration. And these studies are available. I mean, we're happy to provide it. I think the other point I want to make, and these are facts, you know. The other point I want to make is that the economic benefits of penetration. It is also, I mean, World Bank recently said that for every 10% that we penetrate voice, then you'll see a GDP increase 5.8, and similar with mobile data, a recent study said, or internet access as well. For every 10% of penetration improvement, I mean, we're sitting at, 5% in this country at the moment, you will see a 1.4% increase in GDP growth. I think the other point of this is that, you know, these arguments says, well, we've completed our penetration, we're sitting at 104, 107%. As I said, it's not all the population. Certainly in the LSM 1 in 4 bands, we're saying 50% of that area of our population, that segment of our population, has not got SIMs out there. And certainly, you know, if we change the interconnect, it will impact on the cost of for them to get connected. We've spoken about the waterbed effect. I just want to highlight again, you know, because interconnect is a revenue stream for us, should that revenue stream decrease, there is not a direct relation to the retail price at all for us. So, and certainly again, this is a 24 country multi-study that shows that certainly, I mean, I think examples like Israel, where, you know, they changed the interconnect charges, they dropped it by 30%, and you would find directly related to that was an increase of the retail rate by 27%. But anyway, these studies are, I mean, available and are definitive and are facts as well. I'm not saying that this is exactly going to happen in South Africa. I'll be very clear. I'm just saying we need to take international precedent, look at it, and really think clearly how that will relate to South Africa as well. Certainly, I don't see myself with a decrease in interconnect being able to increase retail prices at all. To the contrary, competition is so fierce out there that we will continue to decrease in some form or shape. But the point is that it is a less form of revenue stream, and we're going to have to find other ways to make that up, or then change the environment, be it that our investment is backed off totally because we just haven't got the money to do that, you know. I think another point, again, the Ofcom study, again, quite a few countries as well. And I think the key point of here is that the cutting interconnect may favor fixed line users at the expense of mobile users, and the rich at the expense of the poor, and the connected at the expense of the unconnected. This is not me saying. This is an infinite study across many, many countries. I think we come back to the CBC proposal of recommended cuts. Just a couple of comments. I think, you know, we've spoken a lot about the CoCam. I mean, the costing that is done, we've spent a lot of effort in submitting those costs. The regulator has our costs. Those costs are up to 2007, end of 2007. So, you know, they are a little bit history. If you look subsequent to that, MTN has invested, as I said, in the last few years, we've invested more than we did in the previous 13 years. So it will impact on that costing. Costing is also about looking into the future and deciding, you know, taking that in consideration when you want to do the costing. Certainly, if I look at the proposal and I compare it to our cost today, I'll be honest with you, it's just so remote from each other at this stage. You know, if you look at our, what we call our weighted tariff, or the average tariff of interconnect, which is 96 cents, that's the number we use. So we don't talk about the peak rate, we don't talk about the off-peak rate. We're just saying this is the average rate that people have used. So you take the total minutes and you divide it by, and you get 96 cents. So certainly, if you look at our cost, it's within multiple cents of that at this stage. Now you can discuss, and I think that's what we have to do maybe in a small, with the committee directly, what aspects of the costs you accept or not, and that is, and it's an easy conversation, I'll be honest with you, and we'd like to facilitate that, you know, but those, and we need to look at the impact. If you take them out, what does it mean to the industry, to the country as a whole, and we certainly would like to share our views, but be in the industry of what that is. So you're really be saying as well that I mean, if you look at that end point of 15 cents, at the moment the telephone interconnect is much higher than that as well, and that's a fixed line, you know, all different costing. I think there is one. I'll highlight it. Just CapEx investment, this is just showing some of the places where we invest and how we invest. I mean, we also, you know, there's really three big bottlenecks in our mind of how we provide mobile internet into South Africa as well. The first bottleneck was the interface from the phone into the first base station, the radio bit as well, and that's really been unlocked now with HSDPA. The next bottleneck is the transport, all of it nationally. And for that you need fiber. That just gives you unlimited capacity, and we have started huge investments in rolling out fiber across the country, digging up trenches nationally and locally as well, quite far down. A lot of the 7.5 billion investment is in the ground, committed or going in the ground, and can't really change some of those as well. We've had long studies to see if we could, but it's a commitment, a lot of commitments are there. And then if you also look at the next bottleneck, which is international, so out of this country, connecting to the world out there, and certainly there we have made major investments, not as MTN SA, but as MTN Group, into three cables, not, you know, so the EZ, the WAX cable, and these are huge commitments, $350 million that we've made, US dollars, in those commitments. Also, not relating back to the SA operation, and that cable goes up the West Coast and the East Coast, and then also across from the Middle East across to Europe as well. And those investments, I think, is a key component of connecting South Africa to the world as well. I've got two or three slides left. Just one economic perspective. So, I mean, just some of the further impact. I think some of it's highlighted. I'm just going to run through them just to make sure I've covered all the bases. Increased lower rural coverage, I've mentioned. Low investment in broadband. You know, as I said, we're starting to look at how we do that. Mobile competition may be heard. I mean, I think just one point I think I need to make here is that I've heard many comments about interconnect hurting the smaller operator. The fact of the matter is that in the case of the smaller operator, they are a net receiver of interconnect money. In other words, the amount of money they pay out to the amount of money they receive is net positive for all three operators, not the case with us. So if you look at the latest UBS report on my competitor, it shows that 63% of the EBITDA is contributed from interconnect. So contrary to some of the things I've heard here, there's a practical example how interconnect has specifically helped the smaller operator to maintain profitability. You know, I think it's counterintuitive when you think you're a small network that it's going to connect more out to the customer base, the bigger customer. The reality is the inverse happens. There's more volume coming in from the bigger base. And again, these numbers are available. We can provide more information if there's not a full understanding of this. So really, correction. Our competitor is probably the biggest contribution to their competitive position and their profitability. Should that change with interconnect, you know, we're saying there is good versus competition. And at the end of the day, in my mind, the best thing for the consumer is competition and more competition. That is really what keeps us sharp, keeps us being innovative and competitive in the market. There's no better mechanism. That's from my experience, be it in this country or, you know, I've started our business in Nigeria, you know, we have six operators there. That competitive pressure is really what maintains a good deal for consumers. I've mentioned impact on jobs, and I've mentioned, you know, we're a big industry, and those numbers, you know, we're all under pressure at the moment. The recession, certainly with that shutdown, the RICA implementation has been tough. Let me say, I mean, certainly the connections that we expected at half, et cetera, put on the process, and we're working through them, and it's improving still. But so combined with that and this interconnect charge, I mean, or moving that down, it's going to be not easy for us. You know. Just a comment, you know, this is MTN's vision for South Africa and what we're trying to achieve. We'd love to calibrate it from, maybe from the committee as well, on so that, you know, we can also make sure we're fully aligned with the longer-term objectives of this country in telecommunications. Those are ours. Those are the basis that we have made investments. Those are the basis, you know, based on an Ethiopian regime that's in place at the moment. You know, it's a lower cost of ownership. I think it's still critical for next year or two or three that we maintain that momentum. Continuous investment in infrastructure, you know, is, as I said, we have got first-class networks out there, no doubt about it. And I know a lot of consumers complain, and it's always, you can always do better, but in essence, if you do international comparisons, these are superb networks and so on. And these are, this is the South African asset that we should, I believe, maintain. Drive adoption of the latest technology. I think if we want to be competitive internationally, that's what you have to do. And certainly, the best technology is mobile broadband. Jobs, growth, and economy, I think that goes without saying. So our recommended way forward, what we feel the most responsible way forward on this interconnect debate is, you know, clear recognition that, you know, it's not as simple as just cutting rates. We need to make sure that we balance the issues correctly. And for us, the best debate is the chapter 10 debate with the partner. I'm not saying that the debate has worked very well up to now. It hasn't, I must be brutally honest. But as I've shown you, the issues are complex, and you need to have the expertise and the right expertise to come in and over a period of time debate these issues so that we end up with a balanced approach, a correct approach that's in all parties' interests as well. If one is and use a lot of experts, not South African, but also international experts that have gone through this pain and so on as well. This is not a unique thing of South Africa, to be honest with you. You know, all operators interconnect with each other. All operators have to have agreements in place to interconnect with others. Else we wouldn't have a telecommunication network that can connect 7-8 billion people to each other. So that's all from me so far. Thank you very much, Chairman. Honourable members.
Sir, thank you very much. Members, can I suggest that we quickly get some clean coffee? Because it's getting cold, and then we will take what we can inside. Thank you very much. Mr. DeLanger, you had your hand up.
Can I start off with the unfortunate confession? I said that I've been a subscriber of MTN now for almost a decade and a half and have contributed hugely to their problems. Something I may have to reconsider. Can I start off by asking whether you understood what it is we wanted to say? Because from your input, I must confess that I thought that you haven't understood what it is. There's nothing in your input to help this commission make it at all to deal with issues that it asked you, the big issues to deal with. So I want to start off so that there's no misunderstanding that when this issue arose is when we had ICASA. And ICASA indicated that they're having all kinds of difficulties, including not having the information available there to make these decisions. This committee then decided to call you, the mobile operators here themselves, in terms of the constitutional law as we are entitled to do, to, for you to come and explain to us your cost structure as far as interconnect fees are concerned. Since then, this has gone further that we've indicated that we actually should go much deeper, that we're going to look at the whole cost structure of your industry so that if there's interventions needed, that we can see that ICASA makes those interventions. Yesterday, that was the point of the decision. Did you know that that is what we were discussing? And that particularly on the information we've received from ICASA, asking the question about the 60 cents, the possibility of having a 60 cent fee And that is what we addressed, and that's the information that we needed. Can I first ask, did you know that that is what we're addressing yesterday?
Honourable Member, yes, I did know. And certainly I thought that's exactly what I did address in my presentation. If you're asking me that you would like to get our cost information and have the cost conversation, I mean, I don't know if you were here when we started, but the Chairman read a letter where we committed to have a session with yourselves in confidence on closed areas to discuss those cost issues, you know. So that was, and the main reason for that was not so much to do with the story cost. You know, that's, we're less worried to be public about it. It's more to talk about, you know, when you do cost analysis, you need to look at the future investments and what that is, and that's there's some confidentiality issues that I don't particularly want my competitors to know about. So I'm not too sure. I mean, what I tried to address in the presentation was specifically the question if the interconnect should be dropped down to the 60 and then glide path all the way down to the 50, what would be the impact on us and on the industry and the result for the general consumer out there? So I thought, you know, I made it very clear, you know, what our views are of exactly that. But, you know, please, I mean, if there's anything specific more that you want, I'm happy to answer that.
Are you in agreement that for us to make informed decisions and to be responsible in the job we do, and not to try and make decisions or force decisions that could have an impact, particularly on economic activity, that the information around the cost and so on, if you want to make a reduction in that, the only way to do it is to properly investigate and go into it and be able to ask questions about it.
Honourable Member, I totally agree with you. I think that conversation is long overdue, to be honest with you, and we'd love to have that conversation. I think it's one where we need to prepare ourselves so we can break it down in a form that is, you know, that directly relates certain costs to what the impact would be. I think, you know, absolutely, and that's why, you know, I made the effort of writing a letter to the Chairman saying I'm very happy to do that. I want to stress again that it's more, you know, if we agree on a cost going forward, it does directly impact on how we define our, you know, our investments. I mean, cost is to do. If you invest more, of course there's more cost and so on. So if you want to define your investments, you have to be very specific about, hey, I want to roll out this and this higher speed data, this and this in this time. Now, I don't think it's in the interest of competition in this country that we communicate that, and certainly it is commercially could disadvantage me if my competitor no longer finds what I'm doing. You know? So that's the only reason I'm speaking up to that today.
But you agree, and my honourable member in front of me, Lindy, put it very nicely this morning, that it is in the definition of your model that the crooking can take place, and crooking in inverted commas. Because clearly, if you have a model with a lot of fat on it, fat being, for example, marketing, spending billions on marketing, spending billions on your cricket team that you run, your tennis team that you run, all those, we know quite a lot about this, we know who your sponsors are. Now, if those things are the things that are in your model, then clearly the costs to sustain that model are at a certain level. And it's for that reason that we need to come and get your whole cost structure given to us, explained to us, particularly in the broader investigation of the whole cost structure that you're doing, so that this model you're explaining to us, that we independently can make a decision if we agree with you or not on the model, then know how to impact on cost reduction if we are wanting to propose them.
I couldn't have said it better.
Okay.
I think to be more specific, so in that conversation you would say, do we include the subscriber acquisition cost in this cost? If we do, that's great, then it means penetration will continue. If we don't, then SIM card will change. And so you know, to have that conversation, I think it's an essential one.
Now, because you see, the problem I have otherwise is we're talking in the dark and talking past each other. Because you see, you can give me that whole input on the board, but I have no way of independently verifying whether you're correct or not. Except for the studies you mentioned, I can go and look at the studies and disagree or agree with them.
But when you come to the model itself and you say to me, you have to get so much in interconnection fees, and that's why you say it must be 95 cents, or 98, I think, cents. It, the reason for that is because you have to do X, Y, and Z on the right column. And it's only if we investigate the right columns, plus what it actually costs you, that we will see whether the model is the one that we should be supporting as politicians.
Quite correct. I mean, if you look at the CoCam, it is a costing model specifically also to help the telecom industry to specifically bring out some of those costs that you can do that balancing act as well. And again, stress, one has to start with this conversation about looking at what is the long-term vision we have for South Africa when it comes to telecom. What is the penetration rate we want in 10 years? And put a flag on the ground for mobile broadband. And then see what is the best, because that's the most essential. Et cetera, et cetera. And then from there, work back to the cost model to say, if you don't do this, you do this, you turn this on and off, then it will impact that. That's again why, and that is exactly the conversation that does happen in the Chapter 10, the CASA process. That those balancing acts, those conversations are had extensively. We bring our team, we motivate why certain things is. The CASA has a team with international support, and we have the expertise, and we have that conversation forward and back, and at the end of the day, you end up with a never a perfect product, but you need a balanced product. Maybe if I could just... Okay, sorry, thanks.
Chair, I thought it was necessary to clear this up that we're exactly on the same page on this, so that when we go ahead, there's no misunderstanding when we're asking for the information. You've now committed yourself and you've tied yourself to the process, and I'm happy to say that. Therefore, there's not much I can ask you about the cost anymore. It's not worth doing it. It'll have to do another time.
But I want to ask you this question
about these agreements you make with your partner. Now, I want you to be honest here. You must look into your conscience. Be very honest with what you're going to say now. I don't want this to backfire later when you land in front of the Competition Commission that found you lied to Parliament. You know, it can really be detrimental. Well, not lied, but embellished and so on. I want to ask you this. Are there more agreements than the one that has come out in public now where you and the other mobile operators or you and Telkom have agreed to fix certain either costs or tariffs, or at least if you've not fixed it, that you won't go beyond certain amounts and so on, that you operate in certain parameters? Are there any others than the one we know about? Sabina? Sabina? Please answer honestly to Father Zelanga. Otherwise, on Sunday, you
will I'm worried about picking up. I have a notion next to me by my Sinead Bulyar. I forgot to introduce him. I apologize. Sinead Bulyar is my head of finance director of Incheon. He wrote big no, you know. So let me just talk a little bit about, because I've been in this industry a long time and worked. Was part of that original negotiation of the interconnect agreement originally as well. I think, firstly, I said earlier that mobile operators have to have agreements with all other operators to how we're going to interconnect. If you haven't got an agreement, how are you going to connect up? So we all agree it's critical to have that agreement. The general process in the world and in South Africa, even in 93, was then the Postmaster General, then Thatcher after that, was firstly that in part of our tender process, they had international experts out of Australia, a team that gave us absolute help, and that team wrote interconnect principles down beforehand on what basis you'll interconnect. Every negotiation of us, Telkom, Vodacom, sitting in that room with all our lawyers and with the CASA effective equivalent experts within it, every part of the negotiation was overseen. Every meeting, we could not have a meeting without the overseeing of these international. In that stage, Australia has some of the most progressive interconnect laws and so on and so forth, and they used that. So there was quite an aggressive overseeing process of the then Postmaster General as well. So just, I mean, maybe to give you some more comfort. I know it's not going to be much enough comfort, but some comfort. Secondly, you know, really the main agreement we have with our competitor is that one. You know, ongoing, there could be some other coordination or activities between us. I think the biggest one, if I think off the top of my head, is so-called site sharing. you know, so there we would have, in the interest, to be honest with you, of not proliferation of the symbols all over the of the country, we have agreements with each other to share each other's sites. Again, we do that with lots of very good advice from our legal people, how we go about it, because, you know, it does focus the mind if you sit in jail for 10 years if you do anything strange, as the CEO as well. So there's lots of work done around that. So I must say, if you ask about other agreements, on my top of mind, that is the only real one that is of maintenance, how we share infrastructure. We have a joint venture with Neotel and Vodacom on fiber rollout. You know, so we said, you know, if you dig these trenches across the country and put this fiber that's on a unlimited capacity, effectively, look at it, makes more sense to do it with multiple other people, much more economically viable. And there again, we have a joint, and there again, we have agreements. You know, so you can see in infrastructure sharing, in interconnect, we have agreements. When it comes to things like the tariff environments and stuff, absolutely not. You know, and as I said, it does focus the mind, the latest legislation totally. I mean, it's really scary for us. You know?
Look, I understand the agreement origin. I don't have a problem with it. Clearly, they need to get Telkom together, get you to make an agreement. The gentleman that did it apparently was very happy. He thought it was a good deal. It looks like a rotten deal to me now, but okay, he thought it was a good deal. But I understand that. But since then, we passed the Competition Commission. We have created ICASA to regulate it, and if they were more effective, which they aren't, then we would have had the regulations by now, and you wouldn't be able to rely on this agreement. But the question I want to ask you is, why is it important for the industry, not on the first occasion, but now, this environment, why is it important for you to have exactly the same talent? Wouldn't it be better for you to compete if you were to say that we should have any talent you want to? If I want to go lower and therefore reduce the cost to my clients, I should be able to do so. I'm trying to work out that, except for the original rationale for it, what would in this kind of environment that you operate in be the rationale to tie yourself down to an agreement that is exactly the same tariff that you want or the same cost?
I mean,
it's definitely the last question from Mr. Lelanga.
He's just got one follow-up.
One more.
Yeah, one.
Okay. I'm allowing him this because...
It's just the agreement I'm asking about. It's not nothing else.
Now, I'm just explaining to members, I'm allowing this because he has to go to the Rules Committee meeting and he wants to finish his set of questions. Okay. And do you have to leave as well? If you have to leave, I'll allow you to... Okay, fine. Okay. All right, so I'm going to allow Mr. Lange to finish his line of questioning and then we take the three.
So that rationale now, why can it still exist? I can understand the original one, but not this one. I don't
know. The original one was really just between the three parts. Off the top of my mind, you know, the critical aspect for us is the cost base. That's really the thing. So if there's a tariff associated to my cost, that's the critical aspect as well. So if it's different, I can't from the top of mind see any major reason why it can't be, because people have different costs. And we do have different costs, I'm sure. You know, there's no way my cost and Vodafone cost is the same, or my cost and Celsius cost is the same. You know, Celsius gave me a lot more than they do. There could be arbitrage. I'll use that word where there's a price differential. As I said, you know, one of the reasons that price changed from 20 cents to back to the same rate was exactly that arbitrage potential, and that's the following. What would happen is that Vodacom and Telkom are, you know, they were shareholders of each other. They could have taken traffic at one rate, shifted via the other party to us at a different rate. So that type of arbitrage is off the top of my mind the biggest worry that I have. And we see a lot of arbitrage. If you look in this country, you know, I'm saying between 70 and 90% of the traffic coming into this country is coming in by the cell phone network. I don't know if anybody's aware of that. I know one of the reasons is that there's a differential in pricing in our retail and in the interconnect as well. And those things you need to prevent, because the result is that when the world wants to speak to South Africa, they get not the quality that they really want and expect. You know, so I think, you know, so just I must say, just the path differential, you have different operators with path differentials and how the traffic then moves between them, for people to use that opportunity of those path differentials. It's quite a complex area, but it is certainly for me top of mind. And maybe I can ask the neighbor if he can think of another reason why that would be an issue now.
So through the chair, I think that is the main issue is about the minute you create a differential in the race, you create the opportunity for arbitrage. And what we have found in this industry over the last 15 years is when you create this vacuum where people can arbitrage, you find that quality is the inevitable sufferer of that process. So in the example that Carl has used of international calls coming into South Africa, the quality is often atrocious quality. And that is due to the fact that the vacuum that's been created has been filled by other operators who have then gone in and have taken advantage of that, but the quality there that they can provide compared to the quality we provide because of the infrastructure we put is not on the same standard.
So, I mean, we have examples where traffic is going from overseas, coming back here, going back overseas because of this overcharge, and you can imagine the quality, and then coming back into the country again just because of this price differential.
I'm going to leave it there. I would have liked to pursue it. Imagine arbitrage means competition, but okay, I'll leave it at that on a lighter note. The last question I wanted to ask, I want to give you the opportunity because there's been a lot of speculation about it. What is it that you were doing when you made the agreement and increased the price quite dramatically just before CELC entered the market? I want to give your organization a chance just to put on record what the intentions and the nobility was, and that all the speculation about this being collusion and so on to stop another entrant, you have a particular answer to give us. So this is your big chance.
Yeah, my big chance. Firstly, what I'm going to say now is in front of the commission, as under affidavit from Graham de Vries, my head of regulatory here. So, you know, this is harsh. First and foremost, I mentioned earlier why that tariff had changed. One of the reasons was this arbitrage via Vodacom. The other reason was that there was a competition law that had come, regulatory law that had come, the act had come in that said there has to be quality of interconnect, and so we had to change that. To be honest with you, this tariff came in 2 years before CELC went live. This was in 1999. CELC, I think, went live in 2001. So it was many years before. So let me go through the scenario because, again, I was part and parcel of that original negotiation of the agreement. When you negotiate that agreement, we never envisaged that there's going to be 51 million SIMs in this country. I'll be honest with you. We had vision then, but we didn't have that vision. So when we were two operators, we thought it's going to be a couple of hundred thousand between us. So the traffic between us was immaterial. The issue was the telecom traffic was they had 4 million customers. So that's where it started. The 4 million customers between us was incidental. We said, make the tariff anything. We had no basis for making a tariff at that stage. Okay? And we made a tariff. All we had these overseas guys that were looking, they seemed happy with it. We made a tariff. Certainly very soon, we were scared, as I said, of this arbitrage thing, because now you have, and also a law come in that said, competition, you know, you have to have equal, the tariff must be the same, or if you've got a problem. We changed it. That was 2 years before CELC came on board. And as I said earlier, they get the biggest benefit of that agreement. So, you know, and again I say to you, I was involved. I fought our regulating people to change it because it cost us money at that stage. And so I didn't want to personally, and I was a commercial person, I didn't want to. Our regulator said, you have to because of fairness. We changed 2 years before. CELC gets major benefit from that. As I said, that's what funded them and made them competitive. And they're very competitive in the market. I mean, they have taken market share in some products from us as well. So they are really competitive. Thank you.
Thank you for your patience.
Actually, it's partially addressed one of the questions that I had because I wanted to ask him about the agreement reached in May of 1999, according to ICSPA's presentation. That was actually the sort of the steady sort of pace increase. But that was, and you've now argued that that was actually done without a cost analysis. At that stage, you just thought you had to find an agreement. And subsequent to that, it was just the 1st of November before CELC's final announcement was government gazette. Okay, just to go back to the construction of interconnect. We don't want to have dual triggers because we won't get it. That's right by now, and there is a process upon which we will embark to do that. Just wanted to know, what would you argue informs interconnect costs? Because from your presentation, it is clear that interconnect is a very important revenue stream, and actually that is used largely to fund some of the network expansions, etc. So essentially, then, what would you argue is really your cost? What informs your cost? If you have your network in place, you've done your expansion on it, on the network, you have introduced additional base stations, what is your maintenance on that? If you could really look at that, what would inform your cost?
I mean, the biggest cost is that we build this huge investment machine, and to be able to accommodate a call on that machine, what is the cost of accommodating the call? So that would be a key component. Other components in that cost will be, you know, the access. In other words, the subsidies that we are providing or SIMs and stuff like that in the market. It will be service provider discounts. Those are the main ones. But I mean, I suppose, you know, at the end of the day, a big part, certainly the bigger part of the cost is really the infrastructure and what we're investing on that infrastructure to support and maintain it, you know. So certainly, just that aspect of it, certainly the cost that I've seen up here is more than those costs I've seen up here anyway already, you know, so just maybe give you a flavor of it. I'm hoping I'm answering the question, maybe not.
Yeah,
well,
you see, the concern is that it was the same return to your competitors, the main competitors. The concern that we have is that, are you not effectively robbing people to pay for? In other words, you are really funding your model on the basis of unfair costs that are passed to consumers. So it is, for instance, I mean, we all know we have a responsibility to expand and to reach to the bottom end of the market, and your focus on ISM 1-4 is relevant in this process, etc. But surely, somehow, South Africans have a right to understand that, you know, this is the percentage that I contribute to expansion of MTN. It's not MTN that's running such an efficient operation. It's actually funded by consumers.
So I understand the question. And I'll be honest with you, I don't really see it personally. I don't see it like that. I don't think, certainly MTN as a company doesn't see it like that, you know. Telecommunications is about a volume of phones out there that people can phone to and phone out, the numbers and all the rest. So, you know, for us, it's a good thing to have as many people out there with phones that can receive calls and stuff like that. So, you know, yes, if you find a person sitting on a GFX in his office, okay, he gets a flash that costs him nothing, or somebody sitting maybe in a rural area, flashing the phone saying, please phone me. The guy looks at it. Now I decide, I have a choice to phone this person. Okay, so I really think it's an emergency or whatever the reason. I then pick up the phone and phone that person from that CFX as well. You could argue that interconnect costs of phoning that person is really what's keeping that SIM on the network. But you know, there's a benefit to that individual. The benefit is there. You know, why make the call? He knows what the value is of that. So to be honest with you, to answer the question, it's the width and breadth of population that's connected that is an ecosystem that benefits everybody. That's how we look at it. But I mean, directly, you know, you could then, if you look at our cost, say, well, okay, directly related to subsidizing that SIM and keeping that SIM connected for 3 months without any calls except one, has got a certain cost. Now, that in our costing structure, take it out. Be honest with you, as I said, from all the studies, when you do that, all it does is it will improve the high users' pricing. That is a fact. So yes, I mean, I suppose from where you're commenting, it has got a form of subsidization as well. But again, as I said, from an Indian And I must say, General Telcom's principal perspective, I don't think that's how we see it. We see it more as populist, how many devices active and that people can phone and available to phone, and that's the price of having that connectivity. You know, every human being has a phone and can be connected, and we all need to contribute to for that to happen. Yeah, I don't know if Sinead's got something to say.
Just to go back to your model, you
have
you started on a three-day interconnect. And you started your operation, you started building your network, et cetera, on that basis. Thereafter, there were some increases subsequent to that until it was fixed on 1 rand 25 cents. Subsequent to that, you indicated in your presentation that there was a lowering of actual retail telephone bills.
Yeah.
Okay. Was it in relation to the
decline? We just need to understand, on what basis did you plan your model? Did you think that the interconnect will forever be up there? Or did you ever consider that it had to come down at one stage? I think, maybe, Richard, maybe go back. In those days, we had 4 million customers all on the fixed line. We had zero customers on the mobile network. Then, you know, within 6 months, we had 10,000 customers. Relative to the 4 million, and that, you know, we had 10,000, Vodacom had 10,000, so the balance of interconnect between us was zero. And that's the reason we said, we always said we'll have similar customer numbers, maybe it's not true to that, but similar customer numbers, and because of the balance of the interconnect, it nets out zero, so it's irrelevant in the equation. So all of the money that we got, most of it was all about the interconnect of fixed line phoning the mobile network, because that's where the bulk of the connection. So, you know, really, there was no net money benefit of, and still to this day, you know, as I said, between some of the operators, you know, the net difference is small relative to the Vodacom, and you've heard the presentation from Vodacom, what contribution it does make. I mean, certainly, that revenue stream to Telcom was huge in helping them, you know, over a period when they had no growth of fixed line as well. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to now, it's Patricia, it's Lindy Mazibuku, Reverend Zondi, and Eric Kolwane. And Nikki? Yes, Nikki? And Velma, do you want to come in? Okay. I want to close there because we are now really going to be getting into difficult times with our time. Patricia?
Thank you, Chairperson. Before I ask my question, I think I just want to clear the air and find out what everybody's doing here. In your written submission, you say that MTN confirms its commitment to engage in a round of voluntary cuts in the mobile interconnect rate negotiated via a series of bilateral agreements and extended to the rest of the industry through non-discrimination. The process has started. Are you still committed to taking part in this process to reduce the cost of interconnection rates? Because there's some contradiction in your key message. You say interconnect is not the source of income for enforcing down income, not the way to deliver lower prices. You say on the way forward, the lowest possible interconnect does not necessarily deliver best deal for consumers. What are you saying? Before I ask my other questions, are you committed to take part in the process led by ICASA with the other operators to reduce the cost? If you are not, then you are actually in that process wasting the time of the other operators who have made public commitments to bring down the cost. And then I'll ask my other questions.
We are absolutely committed to that process, have contributed to that process, continue to. We are meeting again next Friday on that process, so we are committed. I think the point of the differential that you're picking up, maybe I can explain it. In my mind, it's just the amount and the steepness and the speed of that we're really discussing. So it's not saying, I mean, we all accept that interconnect has to come down and has to change. Has to change, you know, hasn't changed for a long time. It needs to take the new cost and the cost environment. We need to go through a process and come to a new number, and that's the process we committed to. All we did say, though, that the numbers that was mentioned in the previous September meeting of this committee was too much. It was so far below our cost that if you should follow those numbers, then all of these things have direct relation, and that's really what was the differential. So really, from our perspective, you know, within weeks, we want to come to this bilateral oversee by CASA, via the process that we've always followed to come up with new interconnect charges, but that's based on the cost that they've got, you know, as part of the COCAM and that confirmation.
Okay, so you are committed to a reduction of cost. And you
yes.
don't agree with the figures that are branded around at the moment.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
now the rest of my questions will be short. Did you deliver on your 3G license conditions? And if you've not delivered on it, what's any delay with it? My next question is that when we do have a drop in the rate of interconnection, will it affect your profits and how? But will it also affect your bonus? You know, because some of these things all get bonuses that far higher than what we are asking for. So will it also affect your bonus? And then also, MTN is also running a number of operations in other countries. And in those countries, the interconnection rate is lower. So are you still managed to run? Do you still manage to run a profitable operator on lower interconnection rates in these other countries? But then I want to also ask you, because this is what we see, at least I see what could happen. If we decrease the interconnection rate, then the volume will go up, the volume of people making calls. It's not going to be as bad as you think, a bad impact. The other side of the coin, Mr. Kina, is that if you decrease the interconnection rate, the volume of calls will go up. But have you got the capacity to deal with that increase of the volume on your network? And then the last one is, you're just giving some of the factors of some of the figures by the Department of Communication on benchmarking. Have you verified it with the Department of Communication? Because it could be that your source is wrong, or it could be the department source is wrong. But I don't think you can assume that the department figure is wrong without verifying it. Because we've got that benchmark study both that the Department of Communication has done, and we're really working on that. So those are my questions.
I don't remember. Maybe I just start with the benchmark, because those are the ones I remember. Yeah. You get older, your memory doesn't see you so well. On the benchmarking, we are engaging because we haven't seen a copy. All we have seen so far is the slides that are presented here in September. So, absolutely. Now, benchmarking, you need to do a lot of analysis, and we will and are engaging on that basis. And I think it's essential, as I said, that we're all in agreement exactly what is pricing compared to the rest of the world and how you relate that. So, you will see us continue with that process because it's essential, you know, that I communicate these facts to my customers out there as well, you know, because at this stage they look at that, they think, okay, you know, maybe our pricing is wrong. So that's the one. So if we talk about bonus, you know, Sinead is smiling here because it's guaranteed we will have no bonus this year, you know, with the recession and certainly with the RICA and certainly with this. It's not a if or maybe. It is definite that there will be no bonus for the CEO or a lot of other people as we go forward. The other question was what? Maybe you can take one of them here. Yeah.
Honourable Member, I think the question on I think elasticity, saying that if prices come down, will there be a concomitant increase in the volume of calls that will compensate for the fact that the internet tariff has come down. If I interpreted the question correctly.
I'm saying that if the interconnection rate comes down, there will be an increase in volume because of the lower cost. That's the statement, not increase.
Okay, so
and are you ready to deal with that increase of volume?
Okay, so this is, I think, again, remember, I think the
and I think that phenomenon, I think, is called elasticity. And I think the issue really from our perspective is that we're saying that as retail status has come down, and quite steeply, I think as Carl was showing in his presentation, over the last, in particular the last 2 years on prepaid, where MTN has been giving away 95% discounts on prepaid calls to some sectors of our customer base, that elasticity to a large extent has already taken place in the market. When you're already giving calls away at 0.5 per second, etc., we don't think that there's much left in the context of elasticity. But if you are correct and there is elasticity, I think the dilemma we have as an industry and I think as a country is that what we're going to have to consider is that if the amount of money we've got available to invest, as Carl has said, in the context of capacity and increasing access for people, if that number becomes less, will the mobile industry be able to still have money to be able to continue on its infrastructure investment, to replace equipment, to increase capacity? Because a lot of the money that is brought in is coming from Interconnect to be able to continue the increase in the size of the network, the capacity of the network, to deal with, as you said, the higher volume. And I think that's the dilemma that I think we're sharing today. We're not saying that it's definitely going to take place. We're sharing that dilemma that we have as a company and as an industry, that there is a possibility that we will not have enough to continue to invest.
Can I understand this correctly? You are certainly not relying on your total income of interconnection rate. My understanding is that the percentage of interconnection rate to your income is about between 18% and 20%. You do get income from other areas, just not from interconnection rate.
That's correct. It's not the only. But of course, if you have built a model and a cost structure based on those numbers and those costs, if you take one of them away, then something has to give, especially if you invested all your money in the infrastructure already. So then you have to squeeze, you have to move, you know, decrease stock, you have to change the offers in the market. You have no choice to do that. That's all we say. If you give us time, different story. You know, we're a commercial company, we adapt and we adjust as we have to. I mean, I did stress again that, you know, the objective here is to decrease the cost to the consumer. That is the objective here. I mean, we all agree. How you remove one their revenue stream from us and meet that objective, I've highlighted all my slides. You don't. You know, all those studies have proven you don't. You can't. And that is the challenge I have. And that, I suppose, if it's a key message, that's the key message I want to continue to do. If you know, the way you compete and you decrease tariffs is by having, not removing already one revenue stream and then it's like a double whammy. You're in a quandary.
I don't accept.
Sorry, all right.
You play with it.
Yeah, no, hold on. I've been more than generous now. I want to suggest that, you know, we're spending a lot of time and we're going to run into very serious problems managing our program. I have been, I think, very, very generous, and I'm going to have to talk enough of it. Can we stop this? Because we are going to meet them privately. And I think a lot of the details, intricate questions, that's really where we can sort those things out. We can't do it in this session at this stage. Let's get some general clarity on what the issues are. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be probing and asking tough questions, but I think we can't go down to very, very detailed areas at this stage. But trust you.
Mr. Chair, if I can just answer a question that's very much related to what Patricia's been talking about. And it goes to the overall message that your presentation and your discussion seems to be trying to give us, which is that interconnection revenue is a very important revenue source for you. But you not only say that, you also start to defend South Sea in your presentation.
Yeah.
In any event, South Sea has consistently been a net recipient of interconnection traffic and is therefore a large beneficiary. And you repeat it again on page 11. It's very possible that South Sea, which depends heavily on interconnect net receipts to fund its business, would therefore experience a detrimental effect on its operations. Now, my understanding of interconnection, and maybe I'm wrong, is that it's almost like an overhead. It's a way that you enable your business to function because it's the cost of, engaging in
of connecting people from different networks. It's a physical thing that happens, and you have to pay for it. And there's a cost associated with paying for it. Why then is this being turned into not only a revenue stream, but a significant revenue stream? So significant that you can come to us today and say, if we lose this revenue stream, it's going to negatively affect our business model, it's going to eat into our cash flow. Why is your cash flow not dependent on the very simple objective of being a cell phone operator, which is to offer service, to offer good prices, and to offer, and to, you know, to increase your volume of call making and call receiving and usage of your network? Why are you so dependent on this little finicky thing, which is actually just a technical way to keep people in touch, but isn't necessarily, it's not a service offering, interconnection. It's a reality of working in a multi-operational, whatever, industry. Why are you using that as a principal source of revenue or as an important source of revenue? And why are you comfortable with defending that? Why aren't you trying to make service and price and volume your objectives as offerings?
I mean, the question, I totally agree with you. You know, service and price is our objective. I mean, that, I suppose, was not the main focus of these presentations, to talk about cutting interconnect to those levels and what the effect will be on us. You know, when interconnect is cut to those levels, then it means there's hundreds and hundreds of millions of rands of money that won't come into our coffers, net money that won't come into our coffers. That was the first point. Second point was that the way that interconnect works at this stage is the following. For certainly a big part of our customer base, you know, 30% of our customers, for example, generally only receive calls and make very little outgoing calls. And so if I'm just dependent on the outgoing calls as a revenue stream for that customer, it becomes non-profitable. So that incoming call stream then feeds the profit. That is the model that interconnect.
Sorry,
that,
sorry, you know, Mr. Pina, can I interrupt you? Let's go back to where you said cutting interconnect rates will rob you of hundreds and hundreds of millions of rands. Surely, if it's just the money that you received as a function of connecting people on your network to people on other networks, you shouldn't have been reliant on it in the first place. It should have been almost a bonus that you had so much money coming in from interconnection. And it should have been almost a perverse effect of something technological which is required in order to keep someone from Vodacom and someone from Cell C in touch. Why are you comfortable with defending the fact that you've become reliant on it in order to fund the other aspects of your business model? Why do you see that as a worthwhile argument? I mean, why do you want, because that's what we're here today to discuss, whether you can keep connecting people from Vodacom and people from Cell C if the interconnect rate is cut. And if we go back to the base cost discussion, you can. But you've also had this perverse incentive to keep these high interconnect rates because you've gotten extra money, which shouldn't have been part of your business model, in from this interconnection thing. So why is that the basis upon which you want? Surely it was a bonus. Now it might not be around, and surely it's just something you'd have to live with because you've used service and price as the basis upon which MTN has bent themselves to yours and Vodacom or then.
Make some good cases in it. I mean, but I think let me go one step back. If you look at the way we've negotiated interconnect over the years, it has been based on submitting CoCam, our costs, and to be honest with you, from our perspective, when we go through the costs, those costs and the rate that we've charged has not been unreasonable in my mind. I think that conversation of why and what is key. So firstly, we have certain process here, which is the following. We submit our costs to the CoCam. CASA then analyzes those costs extensively and says yes and gives us a stamp of approval. Then that gives us assurance of the future of what those costs is. Based on that revenue stream, that's what commercial companies do. They then aggressively go and look at how they can leverage those pricing. It's not that it's more expensive or less, it was based on cost. That was because the job they did evaluate our cost structures. You could argue that a small percentage, maybe you could say it's about cost or whatever, but it's not the huge numbers we say there. So now we then go out and commercially make a business of it, and so that's fine. Then when you want to change those rules, then all we're asking is give us some time to adapt our business models. If you cut the interconnect to 60 or whatever it is tomorrow, then there's hundreds of millions that immediately just vanishes out of as an income stream from MTN. That is a fact, an unequivocal fact. The effect of that is what we don't make profits, as you said, because we've invested those as well. I've been very clear about those. So what happens then? You have to find the cost somewhere else to make up, you know, else you can't balance your books. And then we go through a process. So, I mean, I don't know how to explain it better. I mean, you know, thank you.
I think the point has been made. We understand the question that you are putting, and we're getting a response. No, let's leave it at that. Mr. Kolang, you're the next person.
I was interested at what point you're talking about. But now let's explain few issues. You see, sometimes we cannot be scientific or technical. But you see, this presentation, I'm not sure what positive MTN is contributing on that multi profit. But listening to this presentation, there might be something block for a solution in that multi-party process. I don't know that. But from where I am and analyzing the information, there might not be a position to provide a solution in that multi-party process where they are trying to raise some understanding with other operators and like GAFA. There might be something wrong. Maybe we'll come to that later, but I'm not convinced that, in terms of what input they are doing there. But the issue here which I wanted to ask him, there is a request of time. I'm sure we'll deal with the other issues as the request in terms of the letter, which I think I assume that we agree that we meet MTN. I think also it's been a progressive step to take so that you are able to meet and discuss some of the issues in detail at that particular conversation and so on. But the issues I want to check is that you see, unscientific as we may be as parliament, but we've come out with figures and say this is what we want. You see, these stories do not interest me. I want figures. So these stories say it doesn't matter, you can talk about and so on, and it's fine. But what, you see, if you say you need time, what time do you need? What are the figures? You see, so that we are clear that we are dealing with figures. What I'm happy about ourselves as a parliament this time is that we have strong figures. Anyone must come here and tell us if you don't agree with what you agree with. So that this public might know. So this story is of what, because you see, Chen, people must say if they are investing, they must put their profit and their investment. I want to tell me that since MTN started to operate in South Africa, they've been investing more than getting profit. It's what it's trying to say. I'm sure in the close session, the profit margin will come out so that this has been invested, this has been the profit all along, and what is the net of? Because you cannot make general statements and say we've been investing more, but we've not given the figures. The only figures which are coming out is the investing part of it. So I can't be convinced of one side the argument. So maybe the process is there will be the profit and the investment part. I will wait to see whether it is true that only they invested more than profit since they started to operate. Because so that we don't be one side in terms of this match. Then the second issue is that you see, I think honourable member Lindy. Was that spot on the matter. I know that the response won't come, but I think it's spot on. You see, Chair, I'm asking myself, what is the purpose of interconnecting? You see, at one point, GASA is arguing to say, you see, interconnection, in fact, should be a wholesale issue. But what I've seen is that many people are making a kill on the wholesale price, and they still have the retail, where they are also benefiting. Now, the question which always comes back, which I will ask anyone who will come here, if I don't forget, what is the purpose of interconnecting? Is it where you must make your profit, or is where, as Linda was saying, that is the mechanism to people, to keep people in the system. But then we are competing there at the retail. That's why the Competition Commission was saying, don't touch the retail, because I think they are talking about the principle of competition. That's why we must allow competition. But you see, sir, we cannot be threatening the interconnection in the whole thing. But we want to deal with the interconnection, want to lead people to compete there at the retail, where they're supposed to compete. But we can't leave the interconnection, which we believe that is supposed to be the wholesale price. Secondly, if a caster says 40 cents, that is the cost, which actual cost some of the operators, and you talk about 125, I will wait for submitting the close basis. Already, sir, we are making a case, sir. What justification, sir, can you present to this committee and say all these things which have been said? Because from that day, already you are making a profit on that matter. Look, 40 cents, you start 125 and so on. Maybe in that close session, sir, more facts will come out in terms of disputing. Well, I'm glad because ICASA will be in that meeting too. So that we understand their 40 cents versus the matter which has been raised, sir. But I don't believe that people must make a profit out of that. Safety will come and talk to their case, because I don't accept it. We've been told that there are more than 500 banks which they are idling, and they can't enter the market because of the condition. And safety cannot be an impediment for that. Safety cannot sacrifice the other people who want to enter the market because they want to make a key. They didn't say so. That's what MTN said. That same thing is in his best interest. But I'm saying, I don't think that's what you want us to do. You want us to say, because we want to keep sensing, then the other 500 when all friends must just be idling because of sensing. It's what we are told. So that we have sensing. Sensing must see how to, to thrive in that market, so that they make their business cases. So, but I'm saying, to me, that's the non-starter about safety. Whereas we know for a fact that there are more than 400 or so vans who are waiting, idling, but the condition does not allow them to come in. But I'm saying, from where I am, I'm just not convinced that MTN is assisting the process. I'm not convinced. Someone must convince me. I think MTN is the standing block of the process of resolving this issue. Based on that, you see, what I thought Vodacom yesterday was well. Hey, Vodacom, no, you've done well, I'm telling you. What MTN is presenting a position with saying everyone is insane, the status quo is stupid. We must continue. That's what they're presenting. Everyone else was presented is insane. It's only them who understand the market that what we're trying to do is going to hamper us more than anything else in terms of their presentation and so on. That's what I can sum up. So, but I would expect that maybe we're going to detail in that meeting, something will be happening. But I will call upon whoever is responsible in MTN. We want a solution in this matter. We don't want something broke and people cannot move in the process and so on. Because the world is moving to the east. If you want to swim to the west, do so at your own peril. Thank you.
I'm not going to ask you to respond and take this comment. This is your opening shot here today, isn't it? Where have you been over there?
you just ignore me. I put up my hand and then you shut me down.
Every time I want to call you, you've gone out.
This
is the first time you've met me.
Jefferson, I'm not so sure. But the whole issue of lowering interconnection rates must in favor of the poor people of South Africa. I think that was from the outset that more people must be in a position to have connectivity. That is one of the main forces behind this whole thing. But there's an old saying, when you lose on the swings, you make up at the merry-go-round. And for instance, if you look at this paper, there's three sources of income. The advertising, the cover price of this newspaper and then the subscription. If they the burger lower the advertising prices, what will happen? The cover price of this newspaper will go up. And for instance, if the Department of Energy lower the price of petrol, doesn't necessarily mean that more poor people will buy cars, for instance. Of course, they just not have the money. And if you lose a lot of money on interconnection fees, you must get the income from somewhere else. And I want to predict that the SIM card costs will rise. You said it's 49 cents now. And the handset will also rise, because you have to, what you lose on the one hand, you must make up on the other hand. And I have got an idea that this whole project will not benefit the poor people of South Africa. That's my idea. Thank you, Jefferson.
Very much, thank you. There's a comment. Are you going to respond?
I mean, I think that simile is very good, the one on advertising or the media company as well, because that's very similar to what the situation was at. You know, certainly interconnect is the advertising. If you have a committee like this that changes the pricing structure of your advertising, then the result will be that the cover charge will go up. I suppose that's a really good simile. Very good.
Thank you.
This committee is not changing anything. We say they must justify their pricing. They have not done it the entire hour or 40 minutes they are here. They are talking other things. We said justify the cost. So don't say the committee is changing cost price. No, that is wrong. We are saying justify your cost. We are not doing that. We are talking about other things. So it's not the committee. We have given the opportunity to come before us and justify why you are costing us 125, which you have not done. I hope in the do that. But I'm saying the summer is wrong. We have not yet any intention to change structures because I said to do those things. But we're saying justify yourself. Thank you.
Right. We've had a marathon session now. And this checking is the lunch is ready. Where is Vita? All right. While we're waiting, Vicky wanted to respond to a message that came up earlier on. I'm going to give her a few minutes. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chairperson, honourable members. I just feel it's our duty at this time to just clarify one issue that was put before the committee by MTN. We believe it's not factually correct that the data that we utilised is incorrect in relation to the pricing study. The pricing study was commissioned from a company called BMI Tech, and they have indicated to us that they got this information from the MTN website, and we will make the papers available to MTN after this process, and for the record, we'll also forward the specific pages from the MTN website to the committee so that it can be clear and open to the public that we did not use information that was factually correct. In fact, it is information that was obtained from the operators themselves. And if you go to page 25 of the study, the detailed study that was presented to the portfolio committee, you will note that we do make, under the footnotes, we make reference to the fact that the information, the source of the information, is from the operators themselves. So we believe this information is factually correct, but you obviously will welcome MTN to communicate or liaise with the department if they still believe that the information is incorrect. And we are just concerned that MTN has raised this issue at this forum, whereas, I mean, we have had many discussions with MTN previously on this very issue, and we did present this very document to the supporter committee in September, and this issue was not raised, but has been raised at this point. But we will obviously take it offline with MTN to discuss their concerns with regard to the study. But I think the record must show that we used all the information from the MTN website.
Right. Thank you very much. The lunch is not ready. They have to be setting up. Can I thank the MTN for the presentation and for bearing with us? It's been a very long session, more like an interrogation today. But that's part of the process. It's all meant in the public interest. It's not here to offend anybody, but I think it's to get the discussion and dialogue going. And we've made some very good start. So thank you very much for your patience. We're going for responding. Thank you very much. Internet solutions, can we get them on?
What paper? Are you
with
the paper?
I'm with
PNC.
You too? I'm with PNC and
monitoring. We don't need the ANC component, eh? We can proceed without them. Right, okay, now I think we are going to continue.
Because I do write people.
Welcome to Internet Solutions.
Thanks.
Solutions, is that right? That was an S. Good. I think you've been here all morning. And then you can understand what the procedure is. May you introduce yourself and then you can. Do your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon to you and good afternoon to the honorable members. Maybe if I can just start off with the introduction. My name is Pia Bogamakibi. I'm the director responsible for industry affairs for Internet Solutions. Next to me is Greg Hartfield. Greg is our general manager. Responsible for voice business. Next to him is Mr. Brian Peters. Brian is our general manager responsible for solutions development. We are the team that has been mandated by the commission to deliver the presentation on behalf of buyers today. Jay, if I maybe just start by, I think what I'm going to try and do is to run fairly quickly through our presentation. I know we are a bit under pressure from a timing perspective. Although we're not really responsible for that, but I think we'll do our part to try and help you to manage the time check so that other operations can get an equal opportunity to make our submissions as well. So we'll try as much as possible to avoid repeating some of the submissions that have already been made by some of the operators that have already come before you, Jeff. I think what we have up on the screen right now is just a brief agenda that we're going to go through. We don't have 2 minutes back. I think what we'll do is talk just briefly on Internet Solutions and just give an overview of our company. We'll talk about the process as far as we understand it up until now. And we'll talk later about the submission or the resolution that was made by the portfolio committee and what our reaction to that resolution is and what we think is the rationale behind some of the positions that are being made. And we'll deal with the impact that we think it will have on retail pricing. We'll talk about the industry scenario and then we'll take questions. I think just fairly briefly, Internet Solutions is a the capital of Fund is 1993. We were previously a bank operator, so you will hear that some of our arguments should be associated with this, but that was before you yesterday. We are a member of FIFA, and we do work quite closely with them, especially on matters similar to the one before you today. I think what we've done there, and again, we've put some of the accomplishments that we think we've been able to bring to bear in the market in the past 13 years that we've been in existence. And I think really what we're trying to put across there is that we believe we're a company that has thrived on innovation. And I think we've managed to gain a pretty big market share purely on the basis of being driven on the basis of innovation. And we think we've been able to deliver to consumers services and products that are in accordance with the market, where the market structure is. And we believe that it is not true that you need to have high interconnection rates to be able to provide good services in the market. And I think really what we're trying to show you out there is what we've been able to achieve and where we've been able to gain market share is purely been, you know, thriving on innovation rather than anything else. So I think, again, what we have there is a footprint that we have as internet solutions. And I think what we're also trying to show is despite the fact that we've been a bank operator and we're for a good measure, we're forced by law to acquire our facilities and an ability to roll out our network from other operators. I think we've done our best under those very difficult circumstances to establish a national presence. So I think we're proud today to be able to say that we are a national operator. We've got a national network, and we've got points of presence in basically all the major cities and all the major towns in the country. And again, we've done that at the back of innovation and not at the back of high interconnection rates. I think what again trying to show there is that you can actually help roll out a major network in the country. You can actually gain a major presence in the country without necessarily having high interconnection rates. But I don't think it's always true. It's been suggested, it has been put to you, Chair, and the committee, that you need high interconnection rates to be able to roll out a good network. We believe we've been able to do that without having to rely on the back of high interconnection rates. And therefore, basically, being in a position where you have to screw the consumer's nose to be able to have any further. I think what we therefore need to say is that we applaud the portfolio committee for the steps that they've taken. We believe that it is a step that is long overdue. And I think it's being done at the back of various other processes that are being conducted. A lot has been said about the process that's been conducted by the DOC and the policy directive that has been issued. And a lot has been said again about the process that's been conducted by CASA and the meetings that have been taking place there. And I think our view is that those processes complement each other and they play nicely at the back of the process that is currently being run by the portfolio committee. So we don't see them as being mutually exclusive. And if anything, we believe that the pricing that has been put by the portfolio committee on the table, which is the reduction down to 6%, makes sense. I think what Greg is going to do, and I'm going to hand over to him after my next slide, is to try and show that the margin that the mobile operators are already making, and 6% being the total figure that the portfolio committee is putting on the table, is not a far off figure. It's not a figure that is likely to lose a lot of poor people unconnected. It's not a figure that is likely to lead to a situation where there will be no longer an investment from their part or from their perspective into the network. We believe that it is a margin that is workable in the market, and we'll try and demonstrate that what they're actually doing right now from a cost perspective is close related to that 6%. And the threats that are being made here and the attempts to try and hold the country to ransom by saying if you temper with interconnection fees, then it's doom and gloom for the country. It's not necessarily the case. We believe that there's still a lot of margin that they can play with, and 6% should not and cannot be interpreted as a doom and gloom situation. And I think we'll try and demonstrate that. We've been able to establish a fairly big voice business, and that business has been built on the back of interconnection. It has also been built on the back of what is called cost routing. So we believe we understand the model fairly well that are out there. And I think when you make a submission around 6% and the rationale behind it, I think that is mainly informed by our understanding of the price structures that are out there. And we don't think that the doom and gloom scenario that is being painted is necessarily correct. We therefore wish to leave you with a message here that we literally in a situation where
mobile operators, because of their dominance in the market, are able to set interconnection rates independently of competition. As a new entrant to the market, it therefore becomes very, very difficult to build a viable and a sustainable voice business if interconnection rates are less than they are. So I think the message that will be coming from both from MTN and Vodafone, that the status quo must remain. I think there was a very pointed submission that was made by one of the honourable members that if you do leave the status quo as it is, you will be doing that at the back of killing competition. There are a lot of new entrants that are out there that are waiting on the wings that need interconnection to be changed in order for them to be able to come into the market and provide viable services. And if the status quo remains as is, you effectively competition is going to have very little room in this country, and you will have effectively a situation where the two mobile operators will remain as is and probably will consolidate the market going forward, so that you will find a situation where you even have less operators than you currently have, despite the fact that our regulatory environment basically presents this country as one of the most liberalized environments in Africa, if not in the world. So we're saying that the not dual approach that is being suggested by mobile operators cannot be for the greater good of the country. It cannot be for the greater good of competition. And we'll try and demonstrate and show you that the practice that is being suggested is being implemented through is not necessarily so. I will now hand over to Zeka to take you through that.
Good afternoon, honourable members, honourable chair. Thank you from our side for the opportunity to present here this afternoon. As the Abunga mentioned, ICE has been around for a long time. We've been in the voice business for 4 or 5 years, and some of the points on the slide there at the moment illustrate how well we've done. We've been moderately successful by our standards, but one of the important points to notice is in comparison to the organisations that are under the spotlight today, you know, we're a minnow. That's the reality. That's one of the consequences of ineffective competition in the sector. We've also been restricted to providing services in our corporate market, which has historically been our focus, but we have had very limited success in the SME and the consumer market because of a number of cost constraints, one of which is the mobile termination rate, which we obviously hope to address today. A secondary point worth mentioning as a result of our relatively diminutive stature in the industry as far as pure size goes is the fact that we're not yet to negotiate. You know, we don't have an enormous amount to lose like many of the parties that you've heard over the last few days. We're here to try and carve a middle ground, something that's realistic. We're very reasonable about what the industry can bear, what can be tolerated. We're not advocating anything too reckless. If somebody tells you 95 cents or they tell you a rand, they're negotiating. That's the reality. If they tell you 10 cents, they're also negotiating. And negotiating one-on-one says you aim high and you end up somewhere in between. So what we're advocating is that somewhere in between from the word go. And what we've said all along, and it seems like there's a meeting of the minds amongst many stakeholders around this price point, is that 60 cents is realistic from the word go. We don't recommend a 25-cent number up front. We do think you can get there. We certainly aim to show through a couple of slides some very basic, very high-level calculations why 60 cents is viable at current levels of efficiency that the mobile operators have, and with some improvements over the next 3, 4, 5 years, there's no reason they can't get to 25 or 30. But we don't think 25 or 30 would be a responsible decision right now. Part of our rationale is to do a calculation on what the net retail rate is that the mobile operators receive for their airtime that they sell to their consumers right now, and comparing that to what they should receive for interconnect. And I'm going to illustrate that through a very basic calculation. If you have a look at the retail price for a contract, a corporate 500, and let me just point out that this is not specific to Vodacom. MTN packages mirror Vodacom packages almost to the cent. You know, they have an equivalent one, and the principles of this explanation and this illustration are unchanged across all the operators. But if you take a corporate 500 retail package, costs you 730 rand a month. Excluding that, that's 640 rand a month. For that 640 rand that a relatively high-end user is paying, they get 500 free minutes. So if you do the basic division of the 640 rand by the 500 minutes that they're paying for, it costs them 1 rand 28 per minute. So that's the actual price at a very gross level that the network operators are receiving on a corporate 500 package. We've heard mentioned a couple of times this morning that they pay a substantial amount of money to the service providers for servicing and supporting their customers. That is up to 28%, depending on volume and depending on the particular contract in question. They're all in the region of the mid-20s to the high-20s from a percentage perspective. So if you take the 28% off that 1 rand 28, the net cost per minute is actually 92 cents. We've also heard indirectly, but it's fairly common knowledge, that there's a connection incentive bonus that is paid to service providers every time a SIM card is sold.